Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, everybody. My name is Garnet Lee, and this is going to be an awesome show. I'm convincing myself of that despite the fact that I have a cold. Zav has the cold even worse, so he's not even here.
But Garnet, we have so many awesome games to talk about.
I thought we only had one game to talk about.
Well, that's enough for anybody.
There's one game filled with a multitude of games within it, right?
One game to rule them all.
One game to rule them all, and that's not Lord of the Rings War in the North, is it?
No.
You really need to play that game, by the way.
I want to, but I will.
And I will play that co-op with you whenever you
choose
to play it.
The only way
I will play that with you.
Jeff would play that game is if it was available within Skyrim.
He'd be like, this is amazing! There's a whole other game over here!
All right, so that down there at the far end of the table would be Mr. Christian Spicer from Cool Party Guys.
Yeah, hey, good to be here. I feel like it's been longer than normal. I missed you guys.
Missed you.
It's nice to be here.
We've been juggling schedules around.
Yeah.
I introduced him as part of Cool Party Guys because I wanted you guys to know who to blame for today's musical break.
It's awesome. My sketch group, we have our first rap song, and so oftentimes listeners of this show is like, is the music a joke? This is a joke, but it's amazing. The producer on the beat has worked with Lonely Island and some top 40 rappers. He's choosing to remain anonymous at this point because he's setting up a comedy label that's not ready to go live yet. I think you're going to like it, and if not, yell at me. It's all
because who wouldn't like a track titled Stanky Dick?
Stanky Dick.
I just want you to say dick as many times as possible in this show and have it be relevant to what we're talking about.
Or we could go on the old X-Play tip and go dick, 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 dick.
Cute animals.
Dick, dick. Dick, dick.
All right.
And next oh,
we
to
also
me,
we also have... Oh, go ahead. You're going to introduce me.
I have to introduce you. That. But you've got to have your... You've got to get it in there. It's Jeff.
Two N's, one T.
Kanata.
Yeah.
And he just did this morning a great video, which is hopefully going to land him a spot on television's fabulous Amazing Race.
Yeah, the video. Let's everybody retweet it to ABC or CBS producers.
No, start your write-in votes right now, folks. Mm-hmm.
Send them
I did not bring that up to you guys to make it be a public thing or a campaign or any of that.
I'm campaigning for you. I could be your campaign manager.
You should be my campaign manager.
We've made posters.
No. It'll work out a lot better than GOP.
You have a better chance than Perry at this point.
This is going to get me massive ridicule, but that's okay. I'm prepared to take it.
Were you ever a member of the American Restaurant Association? I have to check a couple of facts here real quick.
Jeff has three reasons why he should be on Amazing Race.
Number one,
he forgets the third reason, but it was a good reason also.
Step three is profit, so just go straight to profit. Yeah, just go straight to profit.
Anywho.
We have some great games to talk about. We've got to go there, folks.
Speaking of profit.
I know some of you complain that, you know, that the show's been a little heavy hitter focused lately. Tis the season, folks. I mean, that is
when the heavy hitters come.
It's when the heavy hitters come. We will be definitely getting back to Cave Story and other games of that sort as soon as we can. Right now, this is like where the attention is, and there's never been a game, honestly, that has had as much tension around it as Modern Warfare 3. We're going to talk about that in the first segment. And then, finally, the chains are off.
That's right.
And Jeff can go as wild as he wants to with Skyrim. I have a feeling that, given the nature of this beast, we'll be talking about Skyrim for a long time. We had a great review. Steve Watts did it for us. And I thought one of the most interesting points, and this is something I'd like you to start formulating an idea about, the thing that stood out to him the most about the game wasn't just the game, but how appealing the virtual world was just to get lost in. And his big point was all the other things that the game does right. The biggest thing to him that kept bringing him back was just how fantastic the world was, mm-hmm. and having that that sort of staycation, vacation in the world.
Yeah. Which shows that those games are better than real life, because getting lost in real life sucks.
Not so fun.
But if you're in an awesome world and a great game, you're like, I could just wander around for hours.
If I got lost in real life and had a sword and shield and magical powers, I'd be happy. But, you know, Totally Rad Show did our Skyrim review also, and Zav guested.
With Mr. Zav D'Amatos.
Yeah, so.
Unable to be here today, but able to be filmed for the Totally Rad Show.
Yeah, well, priorities, you know.
course, I see how it is. Of course, on top of all that, there's other stuff. We've even got Saints Row the Third. We've got Mass Effect 3's beta leaking onto the internet through Live. And I am stunned by the last one that I'm going to tease here, which is Gran Turismo 6.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk about all that. We'll have football at the end of the show. Right now, we're going to get right into the Modern Warfare. You know, this game is absolutely amazing. There's a little funny thing floating around the internet today. As we go to record, which is that there's these numbers bouncing about what first day sales are, and some people are pointing back to VG Charts' estimate of 9.3 million day one sales as if that were a recorded number. Now Activision has not revealed the final number. Most of the analysts' number that I were looking at were saying in a range of 5 to 6 million copies. Of course,
either way, big number.
Yeah. That's kind of absurd. Activision did come up with one number. They said 1.5 million people. 1.5 million people waited up until 12:01 a.m. to go stand in line and buy the damn game.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I agree. Alex Albrecht from our show went down at midnight, and he said he's never seen GameStop like that. It's bonkers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was it like?
I wasn't there with him, because I already had my copy. But
I already got it, Alex.
Yeah, he said it was bonkers. He said it was absolutely a madhouse. He said he's been to midnight launches before, but he'd never seen anything like it.
You know, Andrew Yoon, our East Coast editor, linked a story out of Aurora, Colorado that was quite sad. Did you see this?
No.
Evidently, a potential gaming customer of Modern Warfare 3 went to Best Buy in Aurora, Colorado after they had sold out. And threatened to blow the place up.
Oh, God.
And then was asking...
Like, this is why we can't have nice things.
I know. I was telling the employees, threatening them, basically saying, well, you just wait whenever you get off work. You better be careful because I'm going
to
shoot you.
But he wasn't able to because there wasn't a glowing spot on that Best Buy for where he should put the C4. So he's like, I have C4, but I don't know where to place it.
Yeah.
And, I really hate seeing this stuff because it just gives the popular media another chance to act like they don't know anything about video games and like they're the worst thing in the world. Because at the very end of the report, they add, oh, by the way, This guy has also had, I forget what it was, a large number of run-ins with the local constabulary.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a large number of Pabst Blue Ribbons in
No. He has
probably that, too.
He has a history in the system. So, I mean, it's like, okay, so this was the latest outlet for someone who obviously has a history of something.
But it was clearly because he was a gamer, because many people are playing this game. At least 5 million people on day one.
Yeah, the impact of it is absolutely astounding. And then, before we get into we're getting rid of all the boring talk first, obviously. Stick with us, folks. It'll get better, I promise. Arvid Bhatia, who's an analyst for Stern, AG, and Leech, estimates that this thing is going to bring in revenue on the order of $1.5 to $1.6 billion.
It's a B.
That's with the B, folks, yes.
And I heard on NPR, they did a piece on it last night, that there has never been a billion-dollar film, and I could have sworn that was
incorrect. No, as a matter of fact, because the article from which I took this analyst thing, Harry Potter's Chapter 2 was 1.3
billion.
Yeah, 1.3 billion.
And I know Avatar.
Avatar must have been up there. Yeah, I think that's an erroneous report. But still, the fact is that's why there's just so much around this thing that happens and how Activision's able to do things like the Call of Duty convention and all the other absurdity that goes along with it. There's a ton of money there.
Have you been feeling, despite all these massive, massive numbers that are being thrown around in dollars and in sales and all this stuff, have you gotten a sense of a little bit of a backlash to this series?
Have you seen the user ratings on I think it's Metacritic.
Yeah, I don't pay attention to Metacritic, but
it's getting a bigger backlash than normal of people that are just, this looks like this looks like a PS2 game. No, it doesn't. I mean,
I will say this, that engine is showing its age, especially side by side to something like Battlefield 3. I think it's still a very pretty game in a lot of ways, but if you're talking about just visual fidelity, I think it is showing its age a little bit, and we've moved on past where that engine seems to be able to go.
Although it runs very fast.
Very smooth, very fast, and is able to do a lot of things. It's very nimble on its feet. There used to be a time when these type of games, first-person shooters, you'd have the level where you are in the plane, or the level where you're in the tank, or the sniper level, or the level where you're doing stealth. Now, with this game, you're doing multiple different kinds of things all within the context of one level, slipping in and out of indoor and outdoor and up in the air and down the, you know, and underwater. And it's so facile that way that it's really impressive.
So what?
Facile. It, you know.
Educate me.
Facile means it's nimble. It's able to move from one thing to another easily.
Are you paying attention, Amazing Race? Smart.
I know.
Please,
right?
Can we just stop?
But
all
what's
the
amazing about
to that?
About that too? Because the level keeps going. It's so the instances where you're zooming around a different, playing different roles, different parts within the same level. If you take the time to look around, like the guy who was over in the window, is still over in that window. I mean, it doesn't.
Yeah.
So a lot of those games when they try to move you to a new thing, it's like they kind
it's
of
fake.
Breaks or you lose the scripting of the guys that were there. But no, now. Oh, crap, I couldn't snipe that guy when I was down on the ground. Now I'm soaring over whatever. It's like, well, let's go get that guy just because fuck that guy.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's a tough game to talk about because, as with all of the games in this series, you have to respect the pure level of holy shit that they're able to put on in the game.
We're talking about a single player here because...
Yeah.
So you ask about the backlash, right?
Yeah.
And I think the backlash is...
More about the multiplayer?
Is reflective of the fact that the hardcore, the heart of the hardcore gaming community is increasingly disenchanted with how mainstreamified the whole game has become and how throwaway it has become, especially considering that Call of Duty, once upon a time, was the challenger to Medal of Honor, was the
right.
challenger that came in and said, you know what, Medal of Honor, you've gone down this, you've gone to this aisle.
I'm not going to. I don't buy that those two dots have been connected by the most of the people that are commenting on Metacritic.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think that's about it. I don't think they go, this used to be our series and it used to be the upstart and now it's the big BMOC.
No, I don't think it's that it become BMOC. I think it's that it's eroded to becoming this just popcorn flick. And I think the single player campaign is, number one, it's really short.
It's a theme park ride.
It's a theme park ride. And
as a theme park ride, it's very effective.
I'm going to be the most positive guy here. Like, I have plenty of criticisms about this game, but to start it off, it's amazing. I mean, the single player game, I think if we back up and think that if this game came out first, if this was Modern Warfare 1, I mean, it kind of gets eroded because it's stale or whatever, that type of stuff. But this game...
If this game was Modern Warfare 1, you wouldn't have a goddamn idea of what's going on in this world.
You didn't anyway. I mean, but you're...
Well, I would say that this time the story was much more comprehensible than the last one.
It's a hell of a lot better than COD Blops. I agree with that, but...
Well, hell of a lot better than Modern Warfare 2. I thought Modern Warfare 2 was the most...
The craziest.
Most difficult to, like, follow all of... Like, Modern Warfare 2 was the one that by halfway through, I literally was like, you know, I don't even care. Just put guys in front of me and I'll shoot them.
Well, I feel that way about every game in this series. And that's because this game doesn't care about telling a story. It cares about putting you in the most heightened moment, just a slice of the heightened moment of a chapter of the story.
Right.
So it only cares about the moment that's on 11 in that little slice of the chapter.
Yep.
And it cuts off all the crusts of setup and denouement that you need to tell a effective story.
But Christian, my counterargument to you saying it's awesome is that, like,
it's not awesome. That's the counterargument.
Well, I enjoyed it for what it is. I think that it has absolutely, without question, become a glorified tutorial for how to play Modern Warfare before you go play online.
No, I disagree 100%.
Seriously.
I think it's gone so far away from that's what multiplayer to single player relationships in video games used to be. That is not the relationship.
This doesn't teach you which gun you want to be using in multiplayer.
Really?
What's
I think
most
you decide which gun you like.
I don't think it gives you the skill set that you need to be.
It doesn't give you the skill set. No, I think it's nothing more than you're reading too much into tutorial. I'm saying that I think that it's so short and so quick that it's really just about, like, here's how you run around and use these sticks. Here's how you shoot things. Because on top of everything else, normal difficulty has gotten absurdly easy.
I agree, but it's I don't think that has anything to do with being a tutorial. I don't think it's trying to be a tutorial.
And I
think that I honestly believe, and maybe this is from my dinosaur opinion, but I honestly believe that the video game intelligentsia put so much of an emphasis on multiplayer, and I think that a large part of the audience does as well. But if you look at all the commercials for this game, they're selling a single player experience also. That is, it's not simply a shuffle you into the multiplayer. Yes, they want to shuffle you into the multiplayer, but I think those big moments, that bombastic thrill ride that they're selling is
something that they put a lot of time and effort into and want to make as effective as possible.
And I think it hits a lot of those levels. I don't remember if in Black Ops it's this way, but it struck me as this. There's no tutorial that start off the single player. It's not like climb this ladder, do this, shoot this guy in the head, pick up this gun. It's like you're in the game, you're running. It's badass and dude bro-y in the sense that you're a badass, but how nice is it to have a game where you're a fucking badass just killing people left and right? And I feel like this one, even compared to the other Modern Warfares or Call of Duties, or especially compared to like Killzone or Gears, like they're never like, yeah, bro, and like chest bumping. It feels, it's always at that heightened part of the mission that these soldiers are on, but it feels real in that crazy world. The guns feel better. I think there's a bigger difference between, you know, like the amount of vibration your controller gives you, the sound that the guns hit back, and
in comparison to what
even prior Modern Warfare games, I feel like it's refined. They have pushed this engine. Like, I know it's like 100 studios that worked on it, but props to those guys for coming together and making something that feels this tight, because it does. The controller,
well, it ought
still
to feel
click.
Tight. There's, it's so narrow.
But it's one piece of a larger package. That's like reading short stories and hating one story.
I'm trying to find the right ground to stand on here with my criticisms, which are that the game has become incredibly narrow in focus. In that, I mean that, like, there's no multiple ways through things anymore.
They're not interested in that.
They're not interested in any of that anymore. Like, I think back to, for instance, Call of Duty 2, where at least, you know, in some place like Tunisia, you had some cool ways that you could work around levels and get different firing angles. And
sure.
And also, you felt like you were part of a group. I mean, now this game is, you are a superhero.
Yes.
And
you have two other superhero buddies.
You have a buddy or two with you at times. You get shoved down a hallway. There's some guys that pop up in front of you. They're not really very difficult. As a matter of fact, like, on normal, I was even playing around with this. Like, you could, like, walk down the middle of the street at times and just kind of pick guys up and go, 1, 2. Okay, that guy is going to, like, wait another second. I guess I'll go ahead and shoot him on normal difficulty.
Now, that's what this genre has evolved into.
It's a moving shooting gallery. It's actually a rail shooter without the rail.
Absolutely, it is. And you pull the left trigger and you jump to aim. Oftentimes, I play these games where I don't even see a bad guy. I just move my reticle into a space and pull the left trigger, and it will auto aim for me.
Well, it's neither good enough as an action flick, nor goofy enough as a spoof to be completely
successful
for me.
I disagree with the first part. I think if you're looking for over-the-top, thrill ride, on 11 action, these games, Battlefield 3 included, and these Call of Duty games, provide such an adrenaline-infused experience that they've perfected those on 11 moments, and you're seeing things that you can't imagine you could possibly see.
I like that part, and I would argue that that is what Spec Ops does and distills out of the game and makes so much better even than the single-player experiences. I love playing Spec Ops.
See, I've had a blast playing Spec Ops as well.
We dive in. I think, Garnet, you're playing the game wrong in a sense in single player that I have criticisms too, but I am going to be the defender of this. It's you're playing it looking for those flaws, and if you just play the game
don't ascribe that doesn't matter.
No, it does, because I feel like for people, if you just play the game and sit down and watch it and experience and move and do what the guy's telling you to do, and
your argument distills to anyone who does games criticism as a professional can't do games criticism as a professional because they've seen too many of a certain genre.
No, you just need to just take a step back within yourself and say, okay, this is what this game is trying to deliver to people, and how does it
but
do
it's
that?
Personally, it's perfectly reasonable to look at what it's trying to deliver and say that the genre as where it's evolved to has lost something, and to say, well, I prefer these games to be a little less polished in the sense, not even polished is the wrong word, but a little less single focus, you know, so that I actually have some narrative control.
Mm-hmm. Right, or to say like this style of game
really
isn't for you, but it
Christian, that's
does
not
what
I'm saying, though. You see, you're totally missing the point for me, and that's what's fucking irritating as shit, and that's what people are going to give me crap about. I just broke this pencil because it's irritating as piss.
You snap me? Anybody see?
I enjoyed the game. Okay. I'm not like sitting here being the bitterman.
No, you're not. Like, I think you're presenting
super jaded upsetness about it. I'm saying that for what they wanted to do, that they're not doing it as well as they think they're doing it. I'm sick of coming into experiences like this where it's just, I'm serious. It is so thrill ride that it is no longer as interactive as I want it to be.
I agree with that.
Doesn't have the impact that, I mean, I come into this amazing scene in Paris, but I'm there after everything has already happened. And so I'm just kind of like sweeping the streets and cleaning up. And I feel like I felt like a lot of times I was sweeping the streets and cleaning up. You know, I'll give you, like, there's some parts that are amazing, like the deal that we saw in the trailer where you're chasing the underground, the London Underground train within the truck.
It's ridiculous.
But
that's kind of not the best part of the game by any stretch. There are some things that happen in the
game. That part's fun though. I mean, that part is.
See, for me,
that's Call of Duty. Call of Dutying.
Well, it is Call of Duty'd out, but it's for me a very clear relationship to, if people have been to Disneyland and ridden Star Tours or ridden the Indiana Jones ride and are comparing that to...
It's good. We just did that last weekend, Ariel and I.
So much fun, right?
Yeah, we had a blast.
Great thrill ride experiences. But if you wanted to compare the storytelling experience or the true sort of immersive aspect of Star Tours compared to A New Hope, it's incomparable. You know what I'm saying? You're getting a thrill ride experience, which is just literally dropping you into the 30 seconds of most intense moment in this universe, rather than giving me...
So that goes to my argument about Spec Ops.
Which is...
It distills down, it takes you and just drops you in super intense, crazy, badass moment.
Well, yeah, and it makes it into an arcade game.
It does make it into an arcade game, but it's an arcade game in the first place. The narrative thread is just not, and I guess that's the other problem, is the narrative thread is not that strong, because as Christian said, I think it was, the character bonds that they build are not strong enough to really keep you in this. Was that you said that?
I think it might have been Jeff, but I agree. It's when you're at 11 for so long, the whole game you're at 11, you don't care about anything because all of a sudden 11 becomes zero. You know what I mean? Like, your expectations are reset.
Because
of
baseline.
That building better fucking fall. If not, boring. And this game doesn't quite handle the pacing the same way that Gears did. Where Gears, you're pretty much always at 11, but it has those down moments that are...
Or Uncharted 3, for example. You know? Yeah. When someone's shouting at you constantly, it loses the effectiveness of the message.
And so when there are tender moments, supposed to be tender moments, it happened in Gears 2 with Dom's wife, where you're just like, meh, in this game. And every Call of Duty tries to have a tender moment where you care about these characters, but sometimes you're like, wait a minute, I thought I was playing as that guy. I'm not that guy? That guy got hurt. Who the fuck is that guy? I thought I was him. And it loses that because of this, you know, bombastic, just craziness that's always going on around you. And I get that.
But if you look at it as an arcade game, if you look at the Spec Ops modes and the new Survivor mode, which is really fun.
Survivor mode's rad.
And the multiplayer, what you're getting is really, really refined engine, a very tried and true formula for leveling and advancement and customization that is extremely satisfying. And you have these mechanics that work really, really well and are people enjoy a lot. And I think Spec Ops, I would wonder if you were playing, are you playing Spec Ops with a co-op partner or by
yourself? Yeah, of course.
Yes, because I don't think that those are any different than the main game, the single player game, if you're not playing with a co-op partner.
Well, all right, let's
do this. What I'm saying?
Let's take a quick break. We'll regroup. We'll come back and we will tackle Spec Ops. We will tackle multiplayer.
Don't be cutting into my Skyrim time.
You'll get plenty of Skyrim time. I swear there'll be ample time for Skyrim. All right. So stick around. We'll be right back with more Spec Ops, multiplayer, and then Skyrim time. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. This poor pencil gave its life for Modern Warfare.
It's not the first pencil, nor the last.
And none of us emotionally connected with the pencil.
I know.
So we were at 11 the whole time.
We didn't really care that it died.
Actually, the pencil wasn't on 11. It was only on 2.
Oh, hey.
Very nice.
Number 2
pencil. So you brought up an interesting point about Spec Ops, which is that you can play it both single player and with a partner. And I think that it's I mean, obviously they're designed for playing with, many of them are designed for playing with, the best ones are designed for playing with a partner. I had to keep thinking about that. So because there's plenty that actually like the obstacle course actually isn't that fun to run with a partner.
Like, yeah, we had some fun.
You know, yeah.
You take the left, I'll take the right.
Yeah.
Don't shoot the civilians.
Yeah. But I mean, I still think that like the ones that are most fun are the ones where each of you has a very, very unique role to play.
For sure.
And you're finding the way of doing it. You know, the one that I found that was the most fun, Shane Satterfield and I played at the review event, and it had one person stationed as a sniper looking down over a street in Berlin.
Yeah.
And the other person was bomb squad on the ground level in the juggernaut armor.
Right.
And it was crazy because it like that distills out that high point. That distills out the whole like supercharged crazy moment, because you're sitting up there as a sniper, and pretty quickly it got to the point where we were, you know, basically, at least to the imagination, recreating the sort of battlefield communication that you think you would have if you were in that situation of like, dude, you got to bust left, go left right now. There are three guys coming at you. Go left.
But
wait, hunker down. Stop. Hold. Don't move. I'm going to drop a bomb right in front of you.
But I would challenge that and say that what's fun about that is the other person is a real human being.
True.
Because the single player tries to convey those exact moments to you.
And it's tough.
But you don't care about that person.
And,
but,
like, and you know it's a Travis Shamockery. You know, it's creating this false of the guy saying, oh, you know, you have to do that snipery stuff, and there's a guy across the way doing something, and you gotta, yeah. You know what, Tavish is rappelling down the side of the building, and you gotta help him out. And if that was a real human being, you'd be more connected to that moment, and I think you would have more fun. And I think it's to the game's credit that it provides those additional modes to give you some of that experience.
I wish we could do more than two people in survival mode.
Right.
Survival is awesome.
Survival is really fun.
Does really fit like the whole gun porn part of the game very well.
Yeah.
It does, because
No, it totally does.
The game has great enemies to throw at you between, you know, lightweight guys, and then it ups armor on them, it'll throw juggernauts, and the next thing you know, it's bringing in helicopters as well, so you're having to manage all those things, which also is sort of similar to the sort of dynamic battlefield you get in multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
And you have different guns, and you're earning your power-ups. It just sort of takes a page from Zombies with that.
Yeah.
I really like the survival's fun. I like the survival a lot.
I do, too. I think having that stuff in the game really provides an in for somebody like me that is just the true competitive multiplayer at this point. I just can't – I still have fun with it in a sense, but I logged on the day after it came out.
Okay.
And I'm one of those guys that I have to finish the single player before I play the multiplayer. I logged on the day after it came out to the public, and I was a level one, and everybody else in the room was 59, 63, 48.
You know,
I was a level one.
You know they have a matching sample of millions of people, because you can see it says like how many millions of people are online, and yet when you're like level one, it's dropping you in rooms with people who are level 50. I do not understand that.
I don't either, and I applaud those people for staying up all night and leveling up and power leveling and all
that
stuff.
Oh, sure, they're into it. I mean,
I do that kind of thing with MMOs and all, you know, yeah.
That's okay. Your thing, right.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
But I've gotten to the point where I'm sorry. I know I don't represent the mass opinion, but it's just not fun for me.
Did you stick with it very long?
Not really. I played, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 matches. And just kept getting worked, and you know, and okay, this is.
I think that if you stuck with it, I had
Skyrim sitting there, and so I was like, well, I'm not going to punish myself by keep playing this when I have something else I'd rather do.
Yeah. I think you have to come into Modern Warfare, unless you're going to be a super hardcore player. You have to come into it sort of like in a relaxed mood in the first place, of like, I'm not going to get overly worked up about it. I mean, if you're hyper competitive and you're not going to spend the time to be really good at it, you're going to get frustrated. Because it's still a game where you're going to get shot in the back a lot.
But why is that fun? And again, maybe we shouldn't even waste time talking about this, because I'm clearly in the vast minority here. But it's just a game of tag. You're just playing a giant game of tag with people, and they tag you 1,000 times, and you tag them 1,000 times, and who gives a fuck?
It's fun because they're winning. Like, winning, being successful in tag is fun, and it scratches that competitive itch. And if you're able to keep competitive and get frustrated just enough that you want to get better, and then you do get better, and you're able to check off, like, oh my God, the first time I played this, I was 2-20. Now I'm 10-10. Now I'm 20-1. Like, that really scratches that competitive itch. You learn the maps, you see yourself getting better. I know Elite has its problems, but tying into those stats and you're seeing yourself progress, it's giving you something to look back on and accomplishments and what you're doing. And it's like, oh, I totally just killed Jeff. Oh, my God. Ha ha. Man, that guy sucks. That feels good. And it also feels good to have been the guy that sucks to then be the guy that's good. It's like when you're if you're in a fraternity or whatever, you know, you get hazed. They don't call it hazing anymore. When you start out and like, oh, man, that sucks so bad. And then when you're a senior, what do?
I think
you
what
haze the news people.
I think what
people.
You're describing is this trend, and I don't want to get off on a tangent here because we had a lot of fun stuff to discuss. But John Hodgman wrote a book recently, one of my favorite comedian writers guys, and he was talking about this convergence that has happened between
he's a PC. If you don't know who John Hodgman is, he's the PC from those.
He's also a writer and
but,
on the Daily Show and all that stuff. But anyway, he was talking about the convergence of jock culture and nerd culture.
Yeah,
And when I was a kid, when I was growing up, and I was a fucking nerd, what I went to video games for was to escape into a different world that I could explore and have some kind of experience with that was not competitive in the same sense. It was not about jock culture. And what has happened is because gaming has gone so mainstream that it feels like the jocks took over my thing.
But your thing still exists. Mm. There's just another thing. It's like don't go see Transformers 3. Go see Being Elmo. Don't play Call of Duty multiplayer. Play Skyrim. Like your thing still exists. But there, jocks or mainstream people have gotten into it. Like there were always the big guys that would go to NoFX concerts, not because they liked NoFX, but because they liked beating me up. Like there were always those people that mixed cultures.
Yeah. Well, I could see the jock analogy. I'm not sure that I buy into all of it. So I've lost. And I really didn't anticipate this. I've lost a few hours already to Modern Warfare 3 multiplayer, and I wasn't big on Black Ops. You know, I enjoyed it; it was fun. I wasn't big on Black Ops multiplayer after it came out, and Modern Warfare 3 already sort of had this weird, like, addictive quality to it. Where the two nights I've sat down to play it, I'm like, I'm not going to play this very long, and then I'll wind up playing it for like an hour and a half. And all I can say is that I think that the tag element is somewhat right. But, I mean, look, there's a lot number of – first, it's fun to have a lot of weapons to play with. There's a lot of cool things to play with. I think that the single greatest strength of it is that their multiplayer level design is really fun in that there are interesting circuits to run through all of them. There are interesting shortcuts through all of them. And – there's really no safe haven, which unfortunately...
That's for sure. Even more than any other Call of Duty game up to this point. These maps, there's no safe haven.
Which really leads to a lot of, you're just going to get shot in the back at times. It's just something you're going to have to handle and deal with. The guys who are really good, obviously, have got their movement patterns down much better. And have, you know, one thing that's interesting, this is something that Shane Satterfield clued me into, and I found that immediately has helped my game, is that he said that the guys they've talked to who are good hardly ever run. Almost never run. So, you know,
what
it's funny.
Do?
They
walk?
Yeah. I mean, you know, they don't sprint.
They don't sprint.
They don't click the thumbstick and sprint.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're staying, you know,
They're constantly moving.
They're constantly moving and staying considered in their movement, but they're not running.
Sure.
And I started doing this, and actually it has seemed like, at least in my head, it seems to have helped me with this. And then the sports thing, here's where the sports thing to me makes the connection. I used to play golf in my 20s, and, you know, I had time back then to go to the driving range, like, you know, a couple times a week. And so I got down to where I was like, you know, a sub 95, but, you know, 90, hard to break 90 golfer. So I was like shooting like 92s, 93s, which is really like if you play golf, you're like, God, he sucked. Mm-hmm. But the upside of that is that a lot of that bad part was, it's weird because like, obviously if you know golf, you know that a lot of my trouble was putting. So there was always, I'd play and I'd have like a great shot. There'd always be like that, you're like, holy crap, you know, you're 120 yards from the marker and you know, you pull out like a 9-iron and you hit like this amazing shot and it drops
that's
on the green.
That's what keeps you coming back for more.
That's what keeps you coming back for more. And Modern Warfare 3 can do the exact same thing for you. You have a gun. You have a gun that you like. You start to learn the map just enough that you know some places and you know how you like to run through the map. And you set some things up, or you feel like you're like moving well through the world. You catch somebody and you get a good shot, or you win a gun. You know, you win a drawdown with them, and you're like, wow, that felt really good. And then they had a little bit of sugar on top of that with the strike packages. You know, so then, now I got 3, I get to call in my UAV. Yeah. Or now I got, you know, 14, I get to call in my stealth bomber.
Which I think it adds frustration if you don't get it, but it can be a good frustration. Like if you get killed at 13 kills, oh my God, or whatever, you know, whatever your next, you're building up for this big, you're like, oh, I'm gonna, you son of a bit. And they get you from the back in some cheap shot or something like that.
Well, this is why I like the support strike packages, because the support strike packages ignore deaths.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was saying. Like, you know, maybe.
Yeah, and I never
maybe play it a little more.
I would never begrudge anybody for having fun with video games. I think it's great, and I there are times when I'm really in the mood and I'm digging on the multiplayer here. It's just I get a lot of criticism because the way I experience these games is different than others, and I really am there for that single player experience and some sprinkling of the multiplayer.
I love single player experience too, but so far, like I said, maybe and the sports thing maybe is really it is like. I could see the drop in multiplayer on this just being fun scroll. I'm never going to spend the time to get good at it. But the funny thing is, if you play many matches at the end, you can see that last kill cam. I mean, it really illustrates for you. Obviously, playing on 360, so it's really bad. It really illustrates for you how much aim assist they apply, because you're like watching the last kill, and like there's like doo, 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 doo. And if that's six shots, maybe two of them, the crosshair was actually over the opponent, but just like all of them are hitting. You're like, oh, okay. Just like hit him a bunch of times. Yeah. And yeah, you get a ton of aim assist. So that's multiplayer. Obviously, a ton of people are enjoying it because Elite has been absolutely crushed. If you got the Hardened Edition and you got your automatic Elite upgrade, you're going to get 30 extra days. Activision has announced that they are extending the paid membership for Elite by 30 days as compensation for the horrible troubles they're having getting the servers off the ground. First, it was registration and login servers. And then once they got all the registration and login servers worked out, suddenly they had so much demand on the servers that they're crushed. And it does beg the question once again, can anybody launch a multiplayer online service and not have it crash? Because you know these guys knew it was going to be super crowded. And you know they have plenty of money, and yet they're still overloaded beyond belief. Yeah. And if you're concerned, if you're a Modern Warfare 3 player, no reason to be worried. All of the data is being recorded and stored. This is solely a front end and management problem. They can't put enough displays out there to show you and you know pour through and correlate all that data. So the data's there. One day when Elite's up and running for everybody, you'll be able to see it. But for the time being, you're kind of stuck. Not too dissimilar from the troubles that WoW had when it launched originally. Remember the original 12 servers?
Oh,
WoW?
God, yes.
I was on one of those.
Me too. I was on Blackhand. I was on Blackhand. And
I was on Death something. Deathwing, maybe?
I doubt that was called Deathwing. But it doesn't matter. Anyway. Sitting in those queues for hours, man. You were 398th in the queue.
That was terrible. So maybe they'll be able to bring over some of their extra server space, considering that Activision Blizzard has continued to see erosion of subscriber numbers for WoW. During July, August, and September, they lost another 800,000 subscribers.
And I think that announcement that they had at BlizzCon is a direct speaking to that issue directly in the sense
of the Pandarans.
Well, not only the expansion, but the idea of if you commit to a year, we'll give you Diablo.
Yes.
I think that is exactly Operation Retain Subscribers.
Operation Retain Subscribers.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, I kept describing it as this targeted attack on the Death Star that is Star Wars coming up.
Yeah.
And I think that's leveraging their properties to address exactly that issue.
Blizzard's Mike Morhaime said that the declines were mostly in the East as well, which, you know, that's been one of their big, big markets has been China. And, you know, that's a really competitive market. It's been the stronghold for free-to-play MMOs. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we know how popular those have become over there. They still haven't really caught on to the same degree in North America. Do you think that that Blizzard might be a little more exposed, or WoW might be a little more exposed in that marketplace than it is back here in North America and possibly in Europe?
It's certainly possible. I don't have any.
And by exposed,
sense.
I mean, you know, like more transient nature. People play it and invest in it, and then like, oh, I want to go into the next thing.
Yeah. It seems like the MMO space in total is much more vibrant in the East than it is here. And there's so many more people that are playing, like you say, free to play, mm-hmm. and all these flavors of the month that keep coming up in Asia first and getting ported over here. You know what I mean?
How much overlap do you suspect that there is between the person who wants to play a massive world fantasy game, you know, like a World of Warcraft or upcoming Star Wars, and something like Skyrim? To my mind, there's a lot. I mean, I know that I loved WoW, but I stay away from WoW now because I can't play anything else while I'm playing it. Mm-hmm. And I look at Skyrim and I go, oh my God, it looks so crazy. I want to go play this game so bad.
Well, you know, they call it a massively single player role playing game.
Right.
You know, so it scratches a similar itch. I think you can carve out your identity in this virtual world in a similar sense. So I think that, I mean, it certainly appeals to me And I, in the same way, those two types of games.
I wonder if those gamers, though, they don't necessarily need to let their WoW subscription lapse. Like, they'll go dive in, you know, deep into the rabbit hole like Jeff has, you know, dive into Skyrim and play Skyrim. But then when that's done, it's a massive game, but it will still end at some point, and then they jump right back into WoW. I don't know if those people necessarily quit their MMO.
I don't think they do. I don't think they do at all.
Put it on pause or something.
Which is, you know, and Blizzard made that much more friendly process over the last few years. Right now, you know, you do, like, park your characters, you can step away.
Well, it was always like that, but yeah, I mean, they never deleted any character ever. But now it's, I mean, I get emails from Blizzard saying, hey, how about for 14 free days? You want to just hop back on? Your guy's waiting for you, dude. Just
I love how they use your character name, too. It's
Like,
I forget my character's name, but they'd be like, oh, so I'd like to, wonders if you'd like to come back to the world of Azeroth. Like, no, I'm good. Thanks. Thanks. I'm clean. I'm clean and sober.
You have 28 messages on MySpace.
It is the world that presents a lot of the appeal to World of Warcraft. I remember, you know, how fun it was, you know, zoning the first time whenever, you know, you found somebody, so you're like, oh, I get to go to a new zone now.
Oh, yeah.
This is awesome.
Absolutely. I mean, that discovery is what I love about video games, and there's so much of it in Skyrim, the concept of discovery. And I think that for me, the thing that I'm loving most about Skyrim, and I am many hours in at this point, is the sort of internal logic of everything. It has such a consistent internal design sense. And that is evident in towns, in, you know, every burg you discover has residents, and every one of those residents has a house, and every single house that they have is particular to their profession and what they've got in their house. If they're a rich person, they have more stuff in it that you could potentially steal if you want to go the thief route. All that has such an internal logic, but it also permeates into, like, dungeon design, which is so much fun. And there are so many dungeons in the game.
They're all the dungeons?
All the dungeons and all the dragons. But you'll go into a dungeon that has, you know, is you're going down there to get this. I'm on a quest right now where I'm searching out these rare books.
Okay,
super cool.
That's a pretty plausible one. I like that. That's
right. Cool. So I go into this dungeon, and of course the dungeon is full of mages. You know, because those are the dudes that are dealing with books, and there's lots of books in this particular dungeon. And you go into an area and they're doing experiments, and the books that are there are about sort of the experiments that they're doing, and they're doing experiments on vampires. And so there's all these vampires in cages, and there's, like, ones being dissected on a table, and, you know, it all has nothing to do with anything specific. It's not because this particular quest is about these mages that do this thing, but that just has that internal logic to it. I was in another area where I went down into this cave, and I'm going deep, you know, it's all dank and dark and dripping with water, and you know, you have to use my mage light to see my way, and, you know, it's all creaky doors and dungeon stuff. And then I open out into this huge chasm, right, with wood bridges between these pillars and stuff. And I climb all the way down to the bottom, and I go through another little cave, and it opens out into a lush forest at the bottom of this cave. And
what?
If you look up, there's a hole in the top of the ceiling that is shedding light down in there. And that light is what allows the stuff to grow at the bottom of this cave. And there's a waterfall
amazing
in the side. Yeah, there's a waterfall that's giving water. And if you went up to the top outside the cave, you would see that hole in the ground, because it all makes sense. It all has an internal logic that is a living, breathing world. And so few games are like that nowadays. It's such a special experience to encounter that level of consistency and believability, you know? And that, I think, is really true immersion for me. I had another experience
that's
where...
That's why I want to play this game so badly, but I know the time hole, the time commitment... See, the good thing about a Skyrim is that ultimately the time commitment is finite. Because there is, you know, there is a certain amount of content there. Of course, by the time I was remotely near them, there'd be more DLC and horse armor and who knows whatever the hell else.
But I read a funny tweet when somebody was like, my horse got killed by a bandit. If only he'd had horse armor.
If only he'd had horse armor. Yeah.
The good news about the time hole, though, is when you get down there, if you look up, you
there's
can
a ray
see
of sunlight.
Yeah,
you're like, I'm going to get out of here.
It all makes sense.
Yeah. I had another experience, like fighting the dragons also. I haven't been able to talk about that yet on the show. And I love the integration of dragons into this world because it feels epic. You know, it's exactly what you would want dragons to feel like. Now, first of all, you are dragonborn. The character you play is right. dragonborn. So you have these shouts that you get to learn. And how you learn them is super cool. And then you have to infuse them with dragon essence. So you have to slay dragons. So you're always on the lookout for dragons. And when you'll encounter a dragon, it is a momentous experience. You'll feel the flap of the wings in your controller and hear the sound of the flapping wings, and they're circling overhead. And then it's like, oh, crap, okay, am I ready? Am I ready? Let's make this happen. Let's make this happen. And you shoot him with an arrow, and he comes down, and the battles are epic. And I came out of a dungeon one time, and then I heard a dragon. I was like, oh, good, cool. I want to power up one of my shouts. So I started going to attack the dragon, and the dragon circles around me and then kind of goes off down this other area. And I come around a corner and I see where it is, and it has started a fight with a giant. And so it's this giant and the dragon fighting each other. And I literally remember I was talking last week about saving your game in the great screenshots. Mm-hmm. I literally paused my game and saved it right at this moment where it was the most like perfect painting that you would find on the cover of a Dungeons and Dragons manual, where it's this dragon in full like outstretched wings blasting fire with this giant staring directly at his mouth with his club over his head, like defying the dragon. I was like, this is amazing. And so me and the giant like tag team this dragon and kill it, and then the giant turns on me and I have to kill the giant.
Aww.
And then I looted a giant's toe
giant.
From the giant, which is like, you know, how all the objects in the game are full 3D rendered. So I have this giant's toe in my inventory.
What the hell are you gonna do with that?
Put it in some alchemy potions, bro.
Of course. I'm gonna put in some alchemy potions.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to let you brew up some alchemy potions. When we come back, what I want to talk about a little bit in Skyrim is combat, because that's one of the things that people have been, you know, very inquisitive about, is what the melee combat is like. And it is a big part of this game. And we talked a lot about the world, the environment, the narrative, all those sort of things. Can't overlook that a lot of the times you are hacking and slashing or casting fire spells. It's a big part of the game. We will talk about that when we come back in just a few minutes.
As far as something that's really going to maybe blow me out of the water, it might not be. It might not be. On a positive note, though, I'm really excited for Project B.
Yeah, Project B is going to be fantastic. Super stoked.
Child Supply. Child
Project
Supply.
B.
Child Supply.
Project B.
Child Supply.
I am B.
Appropriate.
I am B.
Child Supply.
B.
Child Supply.
And it's not because I'm too cool for school.
That's not the reason that's in play here.
School cool. Project B. I'm the baby bear porridge of cool for school.
Child Supply.
I'm the baby bear Project B.
You're not big man on campus, but you are Project B. But you are a man on campus.
Baby bear. Baby Bear Project B. Baby Bear.
Not that he's not too cool.
Not that he's not too cool. School cool. Project B. I am appropriate. I am Project B.
Child Supply.
I am just the right amount of
just right. Just right.
I am appropriately cool for the school that I'm going to. School. Baby Bear. Baby Bear.
Not too much, not too little.
Not too much, not too little. I am appropriately cool.
Appropriately cool.
School cool.
School cool.
School cool.
Too cool for school.
We need a 90s hand signs for that, like too legit or something. You know?
Too cool for.
I was sort of getting like a school. Revenge of the Nerds vibe from that a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see, what was it? I don't remember the cast name. It was like doing the keyboard there.
Poindexter?
Yeah,
no, on the violin. Lamar.
Lamar, yes.
Listen to you guys with your Revenge of the Nerds knowledge. Laying
awesome.
It down.
That's right, we're bringing it down. Hey, a little bit later on, we are still going to talk about whether or not we are too hard on handheld gaming in this podcast, and whether or not you actually have to play handheld games on the go, or if you might just be playing them on your couch or in your bed or wherever you are at home. No reason you can't play
bathtub.
It.
Do you do
sure.
that? I have
take bath.
I know
gaming.
People that do that, but I'm always afraid of dropping said device.
I don't take baths. I take showers, so yeah.
I still do. I started from when I was a runner, but like in the ice bath or a hot bath or Whirlpool, people would be playing at that time. I guess it was the GBA. And I was like, ooh, you're going to drop your expensive. And, you know, whatever. I never did.
Mm-hmm. Well, after like working out or whatever, I can like lay back in a nice hot bath with an iPad, just sort of like chill on Flipboard or something.
Cool.
Yeah, not going to play a game, I don't think. I would. I do actually. I mean, you're right. I do think about not wanting to drop it, but like flipping through Flipboard is another.
Yeah,
like,
but yeah,
no big deal. Hey, so back to the Skyrim conversation. So we've talked a ton about the world. Obviously, great place to get lost in. I really can't wait to like be able to. I hate having to sit here and just sort of like ask the questions and feel like the moderator, because I want to know more about the game from having played. I want to be able to participate, but I haven't played
it. But that's what's amazing about it too, is that even after you, and I haven't played it either, but after you played it, the chance of you seeing the dragon.
Right, doing giant the exact fight, same thing that I saw, yeah.
It won't happen, and that's freaking cool.
It by the way, sorry for the sipping noise. I had to get a refill on the tea. I still, like, we're keeping the cold beat down, but it's like trying to rear its ugly head. So combat, obviously, has been the one piece, not obviously, combat seems to be the one piece that people continue to sort of knock a little bit on Skyrim. And I think this year in particular, it's in sharp contrast to a Dark Souls, where the combat system is so well put together and it's so physics driven, and you have this fantastic sense of wielding a sword and carrying a shield or having a pike in your hands or wielding a crossbow, versus the first person hack and slash engine of Oblivion, at least, and what I perceive to be the same as Skyrim, has been very much just sort of a you click the mouse button and that arm in front of you lashes out and it smacks something.
Well, they've added. To be completely honest and objective about it, despite my clear love for this game, I can understand some criticism with the combat system. I can understand it's a little clunky, especially playing in first person. They've done some wonderful things to mitigate that feeling that arrived from Oblivion, and that is they've added these power attacks that you can do that use up your stamina, and that will stagger an opponent. The charged attacks, if you're moving forward when you do strikes, they will have a different effect than if you're standing still. So you can mix things up, and there's a little bit more strategy if you're doing a pure melee attack. So you can you have to mitigate your stamina use. You have if you hold down the trigger longer, you'll do a more
powerful
attack.
But didn't you make a caster?
I did. I made it. Well, one of the first things that I tried, because I don't believe it was possible in Oblivion, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but was to do dual wielding. Uh-huh. Because, he's left and right hand. I'm going to put a sword in one hand and an axe in another and see how it goes. And I'm sure if I had stuck with it, I would have found a nuance in there that would have been fun. But right away, it was just sort of like trigger. It's not as fun. I don't see the benefit from having two weapons in my hand. And I've never really been a big two-handed guy as far as like two-handed great swords or any of that stuff. So the sweet spot for me was being able to mix melee in with range all the time. So having my range magic attack in one hand and my close-up melee in one hand. And I've found a lot of enjoyment in the magic system. I mean, the stuff that's always been in these games, which is sort of like the sneak and bow and arrow damage and, double damage if you're undetected when you shoot him with a bow and arrow. That's super fun. I just unlocked a perk recently that allows me to have a zoom and slow down time when I'm doing a bow and arrow attack. So if I'm like, goes,
that's cool.
He inhales and it kind of time slows down and he can tick people off.
So how does it feel though if you're just toe to toe with a guy with your sword and hit him with his sword?
It's a little bit of that wacky whack, just whacking each other with stuff. Using a shield adds a fun element because now you're trying to time your blocks, and then you can do shield bashes as well. But I can understand some of the criticism of feeling like I'm just sort of whacking away at someone.
Do you find yourself leaning towards, if you can take people down at range? I mean, is the range combat more rewarding, or is it kind of the same?
No, man. I've perkified my one-handed so much that I'm doing like an additional 80% of damage on one-handed
attack.
So
you'll rush in.
I will use a combination of both because it's so easy to mix and match. I'll usually try to conjure a familiar with me. I'll conjure a flame Atronach to start mitigating some crowd control. And I have an enchanted weapon, so I got to make sure my weapon has charges. I got to have soul gems charged up so I can charge
your
my weapon.
Your smile is just getting bigger as you're
so awesome. And there's so many wonderful
things. Are those
interloop
soul gems?
Yeah, I don't get it.
That's rechargeable batteries. Sorry.
Oh,
So yeah, so I have a charged weapon that'll do certain effects. So that's fun, and so I'll throw a flame at a guy and then whack him, and then move back and throw another fireball at a guy and whack him. Or, you know,
okay, so that's
spike.
Actually, let me ask you a question about that, because that was one of the things Steve pointed out in his review, that he sort of felt like he was almost cheating at times because he went spellcaster heavy early in the beginning, and he felt like he was almost too easily able to defeat the preponderance of melee guys by just fighting a retreating battle, just like backing away from them and blasting them with fire or blasting them with frost.
Well, you know, you have an advantage over some guys, but there's creatures that can advance on you very quickly, and there's moments where you're surrounded, and there's lots of things that happen and there's plenty of spellcasters in the game that are attacking you and shooting fire at you. So, you know, and then you can use spell wards to protect yourself from mage fire and stuff. It's cool. And to completely step away from the combat for a second, there's another thing I wanted to mention that I almost forgot that is maybe a tiny bit of a spoiler. So if you're averse to anything, knowing anything, this isn't something you might want to avoid. But
stop listening.
This is really going to take less than a minute. But I just got to the dwarven area mine, like an abandoned dwarven mine that's all clockwork tech. So there's there's automatons in the game. And I don't think there were any in Oblivion. I certainly didn't encounter any. So I think that's a new addition. And it's awesome. It's that clockwork tech that you get sometimes in these fantasy worlds. And the design is a complete departure from what you see in the rest of the universe. My only complaint is that it gives it, you know, as I am giving a spoiler on this podcast, it was given away in the loading screens. I love the loading screens in Skyrim because they show you bits of the world and you can manipulate those three-dimensional models, and it really makes loading fun.
It makes loading makes fun. Loading's not fun.
But it shows those automatons in the loading screens, and it's a sad giveaway because it was such a discovery of that.
You've hit your minute.
Yeah.
So if someone's tuning back in, I don't want them.
No, I am.
And so then he died. Crazy. Oh.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
It's my fault.
No. No.
Yeah. I
you still have kids?
You can get married, evidently, because there's an achievement for getting married.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And I would suggest, here's some Jeff's tips for Skyrim. Just some little tips. I would suggest buying a house as soon as you can, because
really?
Well, the market's going to turn around soon. I mean, we've been down.
Yeah,
for so
it's a
long.
Really good market. It's a buyer's market, because you know, I part of the frustration of these games always is dealing with the weight limits of what you can carry and wanting to pick up all the new cool stuff you encounter.
Right. So don't get married young.
Having a place that you can stash that stuff, stash extra things, ingredients that you may want. Dragon bones and dragon scales, very heavy. They weigh 10 and 15 pounds each, and very, very difficult.
Now, since this is a Skyrim, is there any reason I need to buy a house? I mean, couldn't I just go find a house that had an occupant in it, go kill the guy and take his house?
Yeah, but if you own it, you're guaranteed that no one is going to take your stuff.
Dude, I would own it. I killed the motherfucker.
Well,
my house now.
You can do that. You certainly can do that. You can do pretty much anything you want.
I think I
want
to live in Jeff's Skyrim versus your Skyrim. I think my house would be safer in Jeff's world, or he'd come say hi, maybe steal some shit from me. But that's it. I don't worry about someone just killing me and moving their dragon
bones.
And
by the way, why is your house safe? Why is your house any more safe if you own it? It's not like a thief's not going to come steal your shit anyway in the real world.
Yeah.
Or is it not? Or does it ignore that? Like, if you own it, suddenly thieves don't want to steal your shit. But if you kill the guy who lives there and take over his house, then the thieves want to come take your stuff?
I don't. I can't answer that. I guess it's established thievery in that place, as opposed to like kind of under the radar. And then you can like upgrade your house too. You can like buy a better living room and decorate it.
Is there like an IKEA in the Skyrim?
It's yeah.
I would love to see their whatever they call it, their logic whiteboards or whatever, where they were building out these worlds. If someone is listening, you can just send a twit pic of that. It doesn't need to be detailed, but I mean, I know there is a master plan of this, you know? Like, I want to see, like, people get hyped up about the Zelda timeline. Nintendo's like, there is one, and you know, that's cool, and people are crazy about it. I would love to see the map, the blueprint for this, where someone's like, oh crap, we put a hole in the top of this cave. Okay, here we go. We gotta make sure Jeff can get around to look down that hole, or else someone's gonna be pissed. Like, that's
well, I think they solved that in I perceive that they solved that in Skyrim by it not needing to be like that's not they're not artificially constructing levels. It's a it's a world. It's a real built out world. So the fact that
everything has actual space. And
it's all real world. It's all real space. They're not faking like a you go into this room down here and now they've carved it out in another spot. They're actually carving out an entire world model.
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to remember. There's an entire world model they've created, and so you're just inside that world model.
And there's actual puzzles inside dungeons. They do a really cool thing that they use these rotating pillars, and they reuse them over and over, but in really interesting different ways to figure out where the clue is to know which side of the pillar needs to be up in this particular dungeon. I lost my train of thought.
Have you had any glitches? I remember when they demoed it and showed it, they're like, here comes the dragon, here it comes. And, oh, demo's over. Dragon stuck in the mountain. We're going to go.
Steve had some. There's a day one patch for it.
Yeah, there is a day one patch. And I don't know what that specifically fixes.
It's supposed to clean up some of the glitches. And
I've had very few. There was one time where I was like riding my horse along this awesome area that's like swamps, but like steam coming out of the ground. So it's like this, like the bog from Neverending Story kind of looking. And I just walk up to this stone and I'm on my horse, and all of a sudden, two draugr's bodies fell from the sky and landed on the ground.
Maybe a dragon dropped them.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it was like that's the stone where draugr's get created.
What are draugr's?
They're like demons.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nasties.
Yeah, but it was like clearly like the game just populated two bodies for some reason, like out of the sky. It was very odd.
That's kind of cool.
Very few glitches, actually.
And we haven't even gotten into, and we'll table this for the next time. Have you started working on guild progressions or going guilding?
Yeah.
All right. So we have some guild stories coming up as still to do. So the reason I wanted to talk about combat is because, you know, after talking about the exploration and all of that element of it, there's still a great deal of the satisfaction of playing the game. And we talked last week about, you know, the difference between a movie and a game is you're playing the game, how important that is. There's a great deal of satisfaction that should be derived from just playing the game. You know, like it's the important part about getting better at casting that frost spell is that you get better at using it in combat and actually playing with it, not because it's just like a numerical like check sheet on your your stat sheet, which ties into some of the changes that were exposed in the Mass Effect 3 beta that leaked onto Live. Now, if you didn't follow this, if you were a member of the dashboard preview program, the beta, a very early beta, evidently, of Mass Effect 3 came available possibly over the weekend, last weekend? Was it last weekend?
God, yeah.
It was only there for a short amount of time. But one of the things that people uncovered while playing around with it was a three-mode system for the campaign. That would be a action mode, a story mode, an RPG mode. And the idea here basically is that, and this is something we've seen Mass Effect moving towards already in prior iterations, so it's not surprising, it makes a lot of sense. In action mode, story choices, which are a big part of the game, become automatic. So you basically get the narrative fed to you the way that the designer saw the story progressing. In story mode, it's just the opposite. The action's super easy, but all of the story decisions are left to you to, you know, flesh out all those things, ask the extra questions, get more narrative. And then there's RPG mode, which puts both, which we're accustomed to, you know, full manual control on both of them. Producer Jesse Houston, in response to, I believe this was on IGN that he gave this response, said, one feature that was present in this early build is a set of gameplay modes that are in development. We want to stress that these features are still in the early stages of development and will receive considerable iteration and refinement. These modes are designed to give players an even finer degree of control over their game experience than ever before, whether it be someone who finds the combat difficult but wants to experience the amazing story, someone who wants to focus on the action and combat gameplay, or fans who want the rich, story-driven RPG Mass Effect experience they've come to love. Mass Effect 3 will support all these options. We'll have more info in the days ahead.
Crazy.
What are your opinions on them adding a way to turn off parts of the game, in this sense?
I wish they did it on the fly. I wish I sat down to play this game and it could learn how I was. I mean, that's...
Really?
I think that'd be awesome.
You wouldn't want control over it?
Maybe an option to control over it, but if it seems that I suck at combat or that I'm kind of skipping combat, I don't know. I don't want
to feel like the game will take something away from me because I screwed up a combat sequence a couple of times.
I think it would take longer than that. It would need to be some... I don't know. I feel like if you choose one option then and you choose action and you get halfway through the game and then you want to change your... I don't know. I like the idea of it adjusting on the fly to me to how I'm playing and what I'm doing, giving me my unique experience based on the inputs that I'm giving the game.
It's a fascinating concept, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it's implemented because
And my knee-jerk people choose which type. They have to be able to track that.
Well, of course, yeah, I would think so. But my knee-jerk reaction is, don't take anything away from me. I don't want any of these modes to be reductive. Or if so, I want to be able to choose the one that is, I get the widest possible swath of game. You know what I mean? I want to be able to play the utmost version of the game. And I think my
fast tracts of game.
Well, you know, my instinct is that most gamers will want, you know, how everybody chases the best ending or whatever. Everybody kind of wants the optimal experience, right?
Of course.
And I think
it's the payoff for your time investment.
Sure. And my instinct is that these alternate modes are for the niche. Each one is for trying to open up that game to an audience that's turned off by a facet.
Oh, you think it's for the niche? See, the funny thing to me is that I read this, and my greatest concern is that someone's convinced them that the people who want to play the game the way it originally was set up has become the niche, and that
it's just a mass market. Play, hey, here's this great story. Come play this game,
or here's a great action game.
Yeah,
but doesn't it feel a little bit like Bayonetta, or what was the game? Was it Bayonetta that you could play with one button? Or what game was that where you could play?
Well, I think Ninja Gaiden, the next one, is going to do that. Like
Ninja
super,
Dog mode?
Yeah, story mode.
Isn't there Bayonetta may have had a simple mode. I need to. It's on my pile, actually. But
yeah.
But I believe Bayonetta might have been the game you're thinking of that had a simple mode.
And I don't find that to be an effective, and maybe BioWare will find a way to do it, but I don't find that to be an effective way of like, hey, people that don't think they like this, we made a way for you to possibly like this. I don't feel like people are like, oh, well, I'll give it a chance because now it's not what I thought it was going to be.
Well, I think it's all on how they present it. If they present it as, you know, again, it's all my prior career and wordsmithing more so. But I mean, in an option menu, if something comes up and it's like, it's kind of like Halo, this is how we intended the game to be played, people will gravitate towards that. If BioWare here is like, play the game the way it's built, and that's the RPG mode, or you can play this mode or this mode, or if what all the commercials are, the most epic action game of all time, you know, combat, or if it's like, the story is amazing, you're going to fall in love with this rich, deep world, and then you jump in, and like the first option that pops up is, would you like to play the story of Mass Effect 3? And you have to select, I want to play the RPG. Then it's like, well, okay, loser, go play that one. You know, I mean, I think it's all in how they sell it, because we are just people that like eating M&Ms, Jeff. We just want to be sold to.
Yeah, just consume. It's interesting to me, how will that work? Like the story mode where you're in a dialogue sequence, you're wandering around, you're exploring, and then the shit hits the fan and it's like, cut to, wow, that was pretty crazy, huh? You know, just we just skip over it.
I think the combat is just easier.
You mean in the action mode? Or
no, I mean in the non-action, the story-based
mode.
But
they just dumb down the enemies and make it easier for you to kill them.
Well, why would that be appealing? Why not make it, I don't have to fight anybody?
Because then it's not really much of a game other than you select,
well,
it's like, choose your own adventure.
Well, it's a story. Yeah.
Well, I think you're not
that
fighting
kind of
them. You're
the
probably in God mode. I mean, this is all speculation, but like you can't die, but it's still fun. It feels like you're dying. Maybe the screen gets red and you're like, oh my God, I'm so close to dying. But you feel superhuman. You don't need to worry about quick saving or whatever to progress. And you just want to play the game and see what happens.
The challenge for me in addressing this is that I think the tendency is to start thinking about this, well, what does this mean for RPGs? And they talk about playing as an RPG, when the reality is it was quite evident in Mass Effect 2 that the thrust of the series for Mass Effect was heading down becoming a more action game focused.
Sure.
I mean, really, it was it became in 2
an action game with dialogue trees
and character development.
Yeah.
So it was a rich action game more than it was an action role-playing game. And I think
there's character development in plenty of action games.
Yes, there is.
I mean, if you define character development as, you know, put points in your powers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really
and the differentiation
role-playing in
the
sense of Skyrim.
The other differentiation point is that, you know, I think we had, especially those who have been playing games for a long time, had built this notion that a story narrative-driven game is a role-playing game and that the two are necessarily wed together. Mm. And when the place that Mass Effect really, like, and it's not the only game to do this, you know, Uncharted, same thing. Because it's an action game with a very strong narrative,
right,
and a very strong involved character. I mean, there's no RPG trappings, don't get
right
me wrong.
Okay.
But I'm saying that, like, you know, you could have that big narrative impact, you know. Over the years that evolution has happened of having an action game that has really strong story as opposed to an action game where the story is like completely throwaway and you're just in there for the action. So in that context, looking at this as, well, what does this say about, you know, where BioWare is going for role-playing games and where role-playing games is a bit of a stretch, because I think what it's really more about saying is, how are they working to redefine a space in action game world of what an action game is? Can we have this action game that has, you know, a great story and great action combat in it and a combination of the two with some character development pieces that make it into a, you know, a bigger experience? That having been said, I'm really torn here, because on the one hand, I totally get this idea of, yeah, you know, let player one play the way they want to, player two play the way they want to, and player three play the way they want to. At the same time, if you're creating this great experience, can you make all three of them be really good experiences if you're like, if two of them are carving away pieces? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a good question.
And does that mean that you then have to compromise the bigger, like does the design, what impact does it have if I'm saying, okay, you know what, I want to design an action mode to this game. So what impact does that then have on how I design my narrative trees? And by extension, what impact does that have on how the whole overall RPG game has been built?
I don't think it does. I don't think this type of thing we have to be concerned about the core product being affected by it, because I mean, I think in their mind, like I talked about for Skyrim, they have a grand plan and a blueprint, and BioWare has to have an idea
They have a great
what most people will do, what the main story arc is, and they also know they have, like you said, it has been action oriented, especially two and more so than one, and so I think they have all these things, and it's like, why not give the gamers their option to do this? Is one is playing the RPG mode, maybe the better, richer, fuller experience. Probably, but I don't think having these other options will reduce that experience in any way, shape, or form. I think they're developing like, oh, we need to put in two more action sequences or else action gamers will be bored. I mean, I think the game had enough action before and had a good story before that you can experience both.
But at the same time, if they're trying to push down this avenue of making it more a action story adventure game, at what point do they have to start dialing back some of the role-playing stuff so that they are able to really focus in on that? Like,
at what point? It was two games ago. That's the point.
Okay.
That was the point at which they were dialing back the role. Well, instead, I mean, at the point where, you know, I didn't actually loot any items. That's when the role-playing got pulled back.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And two is what I'm referring to.
I think instead of you saying auto-distribute and it distributes your points or your wealth or your goods like you can in some games, it just does it for you without opening up the menu and then you making the conscious decision to have the game do it for you anyway. I mean, it will just do it for you.
Yeah. It's a weird thing because you can't really fault them for it, but at the same time...
There's a lot of backlash on the internet about
every
it.
Every game doesn't
a lot
have to be all things to all people, you know?
That's a good point as well.
And one of the things that I love... I mean, the thing that I love about Skyrim... Bring everything back to Skyrim, which is
it all comes
the
back.
Theme of my day.
It all comes back to Skyrim.
One of the things I love about Skyrim is it's like, for me, it's like a great band that you maybe discovered in high school.
Like Rush.
Like Rush for you in high school.
I see what you did there.
it feels like Skyrim was made just for me. It feels like the game that was made. And when you find that band and you feel like, oh my God, they wrote that song, it resonates with me on such a profound level that it's so specific to what it is and the experience that it delivers is it feels like exactly the experience that I want. And that's why I feel like I have such a love for that game and those kinds of games is because they aren't trying to be all things to all people. It's one very specific vision for what an open world role playing game can play like, and I think that that feeling can get diluted when it's like, well, if you don't want to be like this, then we'll let you play like that, and if you want to be like that, then you know. So that's my worry. But at the same time, I don't feel like you have to fault them.
No, I'm not faulting
them. The attempt, you know.
I'm really curious to see how it works out. You know, I loved Mass Effect 1. Mass Effect 2, I was a little cooler on, but
I was vice versa on that.
I know. I am pretty much on an island in that opinion, I think. I really am on an island in that opinion. And I'm fine with that. So I'm very interested to see what happens with 3. I really love the story. I love the universe they've created. And I'm very interested in playing this game, whether it be a, you know, full-on role-playing game or more of an action-adventure game with role-playing trappings. I think they've built a cool world and a great opportunity to build out, like, what the rest of Shepard's story is. The completion of Shepard's story is what this is all about. And whether we're
blowing up Earth.
Blowing up Earth. All right, we're going to give it over to Spicers. I'm really worried. I got to tell you, I have no idea. I haven't heard this yet, so I have no idea what to expect. And when we come back, since it's only natural to come out of Stanky Dink into Saints Row the Third, we'll pick up Saints Row the Third when we come back on the other side after Cool Party Guys members giving us Stanky Dick.
Yo, Greg, I'm outside. Are you ready to go?
I need to take a shower before we go.
You do this all the time. We're always late.
You don't understand. I'll elaborate. I got that stinky dick.
What?
That stinky dick.
What?
That stinky dick.
What?
That stinky dick.
What?
From that pussy drip.
What?
From that pussy drip.
What?
From that pussy drip.
What?
Itchy dick.
What?
Itchy dick.
What?
I got that dumpster dick. Might as well be Oscar the Grouch dick. Nowhere to go is that homeless dick. Little prick is diabetes dick. Low income Detroit dick. Shit and piss Howard Hughes dick. So dirty diarrhea dick. That's an anal OG discharge dick. So fucking bad like that sixth grade gym class dick. Ain't no cleaning that detritus dick. Murky as fuck disaster dick. So dirty like that dumpster diving dick. Down on his luck dilapidated dick. You coughing as bestest dick. Watch your back, it's doomsday dick. Mayan calendar shit dysentery dick. Turning into that pig pen dick, that Pepe Le Pew dick, that Pat King dick. I got no time to clean this dirty dick. Dirty, dirty, dirty dick.
I got that stinky dick.
What?
That stinky dick.
What?
That stinky dick.
What?
From that pussy drip.
What?
From that pussy drip.
What?
From that pussy drip.
What?
Itchy dick.
What?
Itchy dick.
I got the angry dick, ah, the angry dick, ah, the angry dick, ah, the angry dick, ah.
I got that dumpster stick, take out the trash, got stanky dick written on my sash. Dick on David Beckham, it is kicking. Every time I piss, it smells like I'm shitting. Dick like asbestos shit, got you coughing, retarded like Rain Man, Dustin Hoffman.
Sarah, stanky dick. Melanie, stanky dick. Debbie, stanky dick. Stacy, stanky dick. Sarah, stanky dick. Melanie, stanky dick. Debbie, stanky dick. Stacy, stanky dick.
Put your hands up like you care.
Wave that dick smell out the air.
Put your hands up like you care.
And wave that dick smell out the air.
Put your hands up like you care.
Wave that dick smell out the air.
Put your hands up, plug your nose.
Put your hands up,
plug your nose.
Put your hands up,
plug your nose.
Stinky dick
in the nose.
Stinky dick,
take it out.
CPG.
We don't even know what to make of that. All I have to say is your crew successfully dropped Dustin Hoffman in a rap.
Yeah, and we have a video for it. It's
youtube.com/coolpartyguys,
directed by Mega64's own Derek Acosta, directed and edited it, and he talked about it on the Mega64 show. And they seem, I'm not saying that you have to like it because Mega64 liked it, but they liked it. I'm just saying. And if you don't like it, it's on me. Put all the shit on me. I lobbied for this to be on, and they were nice enough to put it on. So if you don't like it,
at the very least,
it's on me.
You're welcome, thread title creators, because yeah, right. I just gave
yes.
you.
Yes.
This is now the Stanky Dick edition.
It's a good song, bros. It's a good song.
The beats were good.
It is a joke. I mean, if
it
you
lives
like,
up to the title.
I'm on a boat. I mean, it's a joke. Yes, it's ridiculous. It's over the top.
Well, speaking of all those things.
Ridiculous, over the top, and a joke.
Nothing that more feeds into a discussion of Saints Row the Third than that song.
I thought it might work out
fact,
like that.
In fact, you guys really missed the boat. You could have gotten that song into Saints Row the Third.
Oh, my God.
They would have loved it.
I didn't even get my early copy.
And the funny thing is, everybody I'm talking to in the press who's been playing it for review loves it.
Well, I don't...
You're disdaining? You're disdaining?
I don't love it.
All right.
I like it. I like it. As you know, I came out of E3. The vertical slice they showed at E3, I thought...
Awesome.
I thought this was going to be an amazing self-referential sort of send up of these kinds of games and be so smart and clever. And there is some of that. I mean, the very first mission of the game is what they showed us at E3. And that, as I've referenced before on the show, that there's this wonderful moment where you're robbing a bank
in
dressed
disguise.
Up as yourselves. You're in disguise yeah. as yourselves because you are so famous. And I thought that was just a really smart meta kind
of... It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
And there are other things like that in the game that, that are pretty funny. There's a character that you... that you break out of a sex slave institution, I guess.
Institution?
It's a classic. Some sort of prison for sex slaves. And he only speaks using autotune. So everything is dying.
Oh, yeah, it's like one of those. He has a voice box he puts on his throat.
Yeah, he's
oh,
one
God.
Of the major.
Oh, God.
He's one of your major quest givers. And so every time you talk to him, he always talks like that. And that's clever. I
dropping
mean, it's a funny.
The hits.
Right. And there's so much freaking over the top craziness that happens in this game that you can't help but have some fun just in the pure level of mayhem and chaos that you're able to create. Especially in multiplayer, in co-op. Zav and I were playing co-op on 360 and just having so much fun. I mean, we were doing the, insurance fraud missions where you're supposed to like throw yourself in front of cars to create as much insurance money as you can possibly make. It was basically like the game Pain on the PSN or like Burnout Crash.
I like it.
And so Zav would like get in a car and I'd like walk in the middle of an intersection and he'd like go and do a U-turn and come speeding down and I'd leap in front of his car. I mean, or there was a mayhem missions where you're just supposed to create as much damage as you can in a certain time limit. I mean, we just blow shit up and we're having so much fun just throwing infinite grenades at everything.
Pretty awesome.
That is a blast. It's a blast. But on a pure like what I was hoping would be this kind of clever, really inside joke-ness, it isn't that enough for what I was hoping for.
Do you think they aimed that high? I'm not sure that they were.
I don't think
that
they did.
I don't think
it's too bad because they could have achieved that. The game itself, it goes for the easy joke a little too often, and it really revels in its own stupidity, which I was hoping it would sort of lampoon its own stupidity and be in on its own joke. And it's just, you know, I could give you a list of about 100 things in the game that are just fucking... Yeah, I mean, you
give us a couple.
There's a mission where you wake up naked in a bondage club, and you're drugged. You've been on drugs, and so the whole room is spinning, and you're wandering into rooms, and there's a fisting machine that you know. It's like it is as over the top as it can possibly be.
Describe what you mean by a fisting machine. What do you mean?
Well, you know that thing you ordered off Amazon.
Whoa.
A lot of it just gives you knuckles every time. Like, what's up, bro?
Yeah.
What's up,
that's
bro?
What it is.
It's the fist bumps.
Yeah, fist bumps. Exactly. Automated fist bumps.
Piston driven.
Yeah. And really, the shame is that for the amount of shooting and enemy, so many missions are about slaughtering hundreds and hundreds of hookers or whatever it is, that the AI is just really. You know, it's that open world AI that's sort of barely passable.
Okay.
You know, and that's really what holds this game back from being something truly special on a pure mayhem level is having a world that feels, I mean, you're in a cartoon. You're in a over the top cartoon. And there's some fun to be had that in that sense. And the level of customization that you have in this game is really pretty cool. Like I could create a character that looked almost exactly like me. If I was that vain, which, I mean, really, that's not what I would do.
Awkward.
And you can customize your car, and you can customize your pad, and your people, and, all, you know, like, your followers. And it's really cool, and it looks great, and the engine works pretty well. It's just where it shines is co-op, multiplayer, just making shit explode and having a great time in a giant playground.
Just judging by like people talking about it and where it is and everything else, I was thinking that maybe this could be the this year's unexpected success. Do you think it could be, or do you think it's not quite there?
I think it's not quite there.
Okay.
It's a possible. It's a crowded time to be coming out, but it's certainly
that's why I'm saying
fun
unexpected.
Game. Yeah.
Well, it seems similar to 2, where the fun in the game maybe isn't in the missions and the world they give you. The fun, and I know you're not a Just Cause 2 fan, but I mean, the fun of this game sounds like it's just fucking shit up. Like, not really playing the game or learning this story. It's like, okay, I'm going to get the car that eats people. I'm going to shoot people everywhere. And two, you had the shitmobile and you literally sprayed shit everywhere.
Yeah.
And like, that's what you do in this game. And you jump in co-op, you blow shit up, you have fun for 30 minutes, hour and a half, 2 hours, and then you're done and you move on. Not what happens next? Does he get out of the fisting machine?
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. And to the game's credit too, they do a great job of giving you really overpowered stuff right away. Like, you don't have to ramp up.
You start. I mean, that's what they said at E3. You kind of start as a badass. This isn't.
You start as a badass.
Badass.
You start with the briefcase that will send missiles from the satellites on your enemies. I mean, that's like the starting weapon, and like one of the very.
It's not a bad starting weapon.
Yeah, and one of the very first missions is, you know, shooting rocket launcher from helicopter to blow up cars all around the city. I mean, you're doing stuff that are usually late game in other games. Really early
on. That's kind of cool. I mean, that's one of those things designers have talked about a lot too, of like, hey, we put all this stuff in at the end of the game that's really cool for people to do, and so many of them don't get there.
Yeah.
Let's get all that up front.
Yeah.
I hear you. It might be a miss for you, but you might.
I don't think it's a complete miss. I had fun with it.
You had
I think there are expectations
for the story and for
So I think that your narrative stance on it might be chilling you a little bit. I still wouldn't be surprised if this was like the surprise success of the fall. Now, I don't know what their expectations are. Maybe they already have such high expectations for it that it can't be a surprise success. But I think that the idea of making it more cartoon-like and going nuts with it was a good idea. Maybe they could have aimed higher. Maybe they'll do that for Saints Row 4. With Danny Bilson said he already knows what Saints 4 is about.
I don't know what Saints 3 is about. I played almost all the freaking campaign.
What is with the executives, by the way, revealing that, oh, we already know, like, the Battlefield 4? Yeah, we're going to do a Battlefield 4. Of course we're going to do a Battlefield 4.
But didn't we know that, too?
Well, of course we did. But, you know, the timing of, like, or just even the acknowledgement of it is kind of a funny thing. Mm-hmm. These are all really big experiences. One of the things we've taken knocks for here on the show is for being just focused on these big experiences and a little dismissive of handheld gaming. So this week's one of the big comments was Camp Kusagi, who said, is it really that weird to play portable games at home? And he not only does it, but also my SSSS miss does as well. Says, no, it's not. I do most of my handheld gaming on the couch. Sometimes I just don't feel like turning the channel. Sometimes I want the game on in the background. There are a lot of reasons I play my handheld instead of playing my console. And yes, I have a big screen TV and surround sound.
He meant a sports game when he said, I want the game on in the background.
Right, right, right.
Not, I'm playing another game and then playing a handheld.
So I think this is a fair topic of discussion, because there have been a number of excellent, especially retro entries or comeback-ish entries that have been on handheld devices. Is there... You know,
I think
is it weird to play portable games at home?
No, but I think that completely misses the point of what we were talking about, which is that
sick burn, bro.
I honestly feel like what I was trying to say in that comment last week, our discussion last week about this, was that you're not buying it. These systems don't tend to be positioned as the hey, play it on your couch in your home device. Sure, some people can play it that way. Absolutely. There's nothing weird about that. Yeah, sometimes you want to curl up with a device on your couch, and yeah, sure, fine. But what sets it apart, what makes it raison d'etre, you know, its reason for being is...
I love it that you did French.
is not to hang out on the couch while your television is also on to play these games. That's not what differentiates it in the marketplace. Where these games live and what gives them a reason for being is to be portable. And I was trying to contrast that with the iPad, which is, I don't believe, that same niche.
And I think portable gaming is trying to maybe get into – I think maybe what they're saying is that portable gaming can live in that iPad niche of you're on the couch playing Words with Friends while, you know, the Chargers-Raiders game, which is a – Thursday night, whatever, right? You have that in the background, and that's going, and you're doing this.
But are you
going
to play Dragon Quest while Chargers Raiders is playing?
Exactly.
Well, no, but, well, actually, Dragon Quest, yeah, I think you could. Or some of the Final Fantasies, you could play that kind of grind game while the game was going, because it's passive entertainment and current entertainment.
What about Uncharted?
No, but that's where I feel like now portables are trying to become the... I remember when the PSP first came out, and I wish I remember which Sony exec said this, and I can't attribute it. Hopefully I can find it on the internet. I can post it somewhere. But when the PSP came out, they argued that you won't need a PS2. Like, I mean, it was that replacer. Like, if you, like, don't just this kind of, you know, snipe from your market. Well, yeah, if you just want that, you'll be fine with it. You'll be getting the same experiences. And you didn't. But now with the, you know, the Vita, it's kind of going that way again. And, you know, why would you want to play Golden Abyss on your Vita if you could be playing 3 on your PS3? And that's where you run into this world of should you play them at home. But there are also great other games on the Vita that aren't Abyss. Like, that's an option to play on the system when you're in a hotel room without your console. But you could also play, you know, any of the other smaller, the name's escaping me. But
Soundshapes,
yeah. While the game is on, you could certainly sit there and play that with, you know, something going in the background.
Well, you can play however you want. There's nobody saying you can't.
Except for you.
I don't think it's crazy. I sort of appreciate the idea. I get, it's not me, but I get the idea of, you know, laying in bed at night. You got the, you know, you have it right there in your hand. Maybe put on your headphones and like, yeah, that's a cool experience. I get that. Yeah, I could see that. Sitting on the couch playing an involved game, that isn't going to be me. I mean, it's just, I think that those games that would be the bigger experiences, to me, if they're good enough to play, then they're going to demand my complete attention.
Have you played Peace Walker and both God of War games, the Ready of Dawn PSP games, were games that I played at home on the couch because they were such good games that I'd rather have been playing those than what I currently had available.
So that's
on
a good
consoles.
Point.
But now those are on the console, so you could play them in the HD experience. But it's a rare game that draws you in, where I love, love, love Peace Walker. And that I was like, I'd rather play this than what I have on.
The compelling experiences, the most compelling experiences in recent times for me on a handheld, and this flies in the face of my excitement for Vita, to be honest, but were something like Might and Magic Class of Heroes, Puzzle Quest, those games that...
Puzzle Quest, that's a great one. Puzzle Quest to me is really good.
Those games that were great because of the way that they were delivered to me. You know, Might and Magic Class of Heroes, yeah, it came on XBLA and PSN, and I'm sure it was great on those. But it felt better because I had two screens, and I was sending guys up to the top and bringing them down to the bottom. I was playing with the stylus. Puzzle Quest, it felt better playing with a stylus than it would ever feel playing with an Xbox controller. So, you know, I think that the compelling part for me lives in those experiences that are crafted for the device.
So I think one of the things you can craft for the device that is another good argument that I saw in the Shack News comments was retro games. Because increasingly, as we move to high-def displays, it's difficult to make a good, you know, full-screen image with the 8-bit and 16-bit assets, because you get the stretching and scaling, and it just winds up not looking good, right? It takes what was good pixel art for an SD screen and makes it look kind of like just ugly.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm designing it and I know exactly what screen the user has in their hand, then it, to me, I think becomes an easier argument to say, okay, let's go in and rework the art assets and let's make this a really perfected version of the original. What about the handhelds as, you know, the retro gaming platform of choice?
I think if you're going to rework art assets, you could rework them to work on a big screen. You know,
You can definitely. It's just it's a greater challenge to take those old assets and move them up.
Okay, sure.
Because you have to HDFI them or whatever. Whereas on a smaller screen of the handheld, there's other tricks I can play, I guess.
Nintendo missed that boat, I think, with the 3DS. I don't enjoy playing. It's better now than it was at launch, but I don't enjoy playing the retro games on the 3DS versus.
What do you consider retro? Like Ocarina of Time?
No, not the one. So I guess that's a good argument. That was remade art assets, but like. The GBA games re-released that you can on the virtual console, you know, the eShop is what they call it now.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy that experience. I don't think it's crafted for that device. It feels weird and cumbersome. But no, Ocarina is a good way of doing it. So I talked myself into a circle and you tricked me, Mr. Kanata.
Well, it's certainly an interesting world, interesting time in the mobile gaming world because, as we learned this last week from mobile analytics group Flurry, they estimate that in the calendar year of 2011, mobile platforms on smartphones, that's iOS and Android specifically, will out-earn the PSP and the Nintendo DS. The way they look at it is over the progression of 2009, 2010, and estimated for 2011. Back in 2009, the Nintendo DS held 70% market share in mobile games, you know, what they considered portable games.
In what year?
2009.
Yeah, well... Okay, but
it's 2 years ago. Just 2 years ago, right? And phones were 19%. Last year, DS was eroded to 57% and phones were 34%.
How many iOS and Android phones were sold in the last 2 years?
All right, but just saying that you're selling a bunch of the platform doesn't necessarily mean people are going to buy games. It definitely shows a consumption pattern that people are interested in for these games. And there's a lot of classic games that come out on iOS and on Android as well. There's a lot of retread stuff that comes, not retread, but like, you know, remakes and old classic games. So they're estimating for 2011 that 58% of the mobile space will be iOS and Android phones.
I will say this.
And they're cheap too.
Maybe this is a different way of looking at it.
That's a lot of content being sold.
Yes. Maybe this is a different way of looking at it, and maybe this is obvious, but I'm still going to say it. If we had had smartphones the way we have smartphones now, there would never have been such a thing as the Nintendo DS or Game Boy or PSP. Those wouldn't exist.
You think?
There would have been no need for them. They would never have been brought into the market. They only portable gaming devices only existed because we thought, oh my God, here's a way to bring a video game with you where you go. If you already had that available to you on the phone, it would never have existed. And they're sort of...
I'm not sure I completely agree, because the compelling feature for me of a handheld game device is still its dedicated gaming controls.
Yeah.
You know, really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, but it's crafting the game for the device. Some games work well. You don't need dedicated controls because the controls you'd be using are a big touchscreen. But you wouldn't want to...
You're telling me that in a universe in which there was never such thing as a Game Boy, and we had had, you know, the progression of smartphones like we have now, and then Nintendo all of a sudden introduces a very advanced video game-specific device that has controls on it, that the market would have gone, oh, yeah, that's what we need.
Successful, but it wouldn't have been the Game Boy phenomenon.
It would have been a bizarre thing, I think, because people were already carrying around these things. I think, unfortunately, the idea of carrying around a dedicated game device is becoming less and less relevant.
Oh, I agree with you that. No, I think that's definitely a challenge. We were talking about this about Vitas. How do I convince people that want to have that Vita with them all the time? Mm-hmm. Which is why I think that, you know, the big thing for Vita to get right and the stuff that I would be most excited about is what they do in their location-aware, network-aware, friend-aware stuff, so that, you know, I want to be participating with my Vita and I want to be out in the world and have my Vita with me all the time to experience whatever it is that they come in with, whether it's a combination of, you know, badges and awards that I win, opportunity for quick play, opportunity to have, you know, like I think the Street Pass thing that Nintendo 3DS did was interesting, but it just scratches the surface of all the sorts of things we could do by having that location-aware and device-aware awareness built in as we're out on the streets doing stuff. Hmm. But if you're thinking that about dedicated gaming stuff, what do you think about the Wii U? Because earlier this week, that's still coming out. Yeah, that's still coming out. Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot said that they are 100% behind the Wii U. We're big believers in the Wii U on two subjects, Guillemot said. One is for high-end games. Now, this is the most interesting part. High-end games, where we'll be able to do a game for the Wii U, but also for other high-definition machines, but also with specific use of the tablet. Two is we like the Wii U for the potential of casual games. Okay, so you figure they've got the potential for casual game side. It's really interesting to me, though, to hear the Ubisoft CEO talking about what ostensibly Nintendo was selling, which is that we're moving into the high-def world.
But Ubisoft is in bed with Nintendo on the Wii U in a big way. Remember E3, and they had, for the first time ever, Nintendo had that, you know, press-only thing with Ubisoft specifically, and they were debuting these brand-new Wii U games. And I came away from that recognizing that Ubisoft was you know, all chips on you know, Nintendo on this situation, but also that the games that they at least at that point were showing off didn't provide me a compelling reason as to why Wii U, like, it didn't have a differentiator that made it, you know.
I will go out on a limb and say on the record, I think the Wii U is going to be a failure. I do not think it definitely will not hit the success of the Wii, and I think it will pale in comparison to then existing Xbox 360 sales or PS3 sales. And when those successors come out, the Wii U will be Nintendo's next GameCube. Some great games, passionate fan base, but in terms of a successful console, profitability, market share, and stuff like that, it's not going to hit.
Yeah, the real problem I think they're looking at is that it feels to me like this is the E3 where we hear about the next Xbox.
Well, what if okay,
that's
let me flip, okay. Let me flip, I don't disagree. Mm-hmm. Let me flip this around. What if, as a third-party publisher, I'm convinced of the Wii U's success and Microsoft and Sony do bring out new consoles, but because I look at the success of the 360 and PS3 and say, wow, HD gaming of that sort, like what I'm seeing in Battlefield 3 right now and what I'm seeing in Modern Warfare 3 is good enough to make a great mass market impression. And now I set the Wii U's HD, and air quote, HD gaming as the baseline, and it no longer matters. You see, they could successfully cut the legs out from underneath a better, bigger, badder-asser Xbox or a better, bigger, badder-asser PlayStation console if third-party publishers said, well, you know what? HD of the Wii U strength and power is enough. That's what I'm going to develop for. That's where my engine is going to be. And then those two consoles would lose
the
power
benefit.
But
that's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either. That's what happened with the PS2 and the Xbox. But sure, the PS2 had an install base, which is why it became the de facto.
I'm just postulating the argument for the sake of what if it happened. If Ubisoft is that in bed, maybe they would be ones to do that. Maybe, you know,
yeah, but
maybe Rainbow Six games are built to be at a Wii U level, and then
the problem is when Halo whatever comes out and
sure,
Gears of War whatever
specifics
comes out, and it is whiz bang amazing looking, and it really it draws in stark comparison. The hardcore
is there
is
that much visual
that
headroom still in the top end? Do you think?
Look at Battlefield on PC versus console.
But I don't know. Well, that's you. Keep in mind you've got a hell of a display to work with on PC, whereas display technology isn't going to. I mean, we're going to have 1080p televisions,
sure,
here to stay.
Yeah.
So if Wii U does 1080p and can successfully do a really nice 1080p, how much more can I get out of it?
The way Wii U wins doesn't. I mean, I don't think it wins, but the way
it could.
The way I think it needs to be cheap like the Wii was.
I agree.
Needs to undercut the price point of both whatever, sure, Xbox is doing and Sony is doing in the next generation. And if what they're doing is, yeah, we're getting into the HD market at the time when we can offer it to you really inexpensively. But the problem that I see is that because the Wii was able to do that, the Wii was able to be a friggin' force of nature and come in there and just
it was a force of nature. You're right.
Own everybody for many seasons of buying and do it because it was cheaper and because it offered an experience that had that differentiated itself. Now, I don't think that this tablet concept is as compelling to the average gamer as motion was ever.
I agree.
The Wii U gets confusing. The Wii was simple. You had this controller, you went and played. The Wii U, we still don't know. Are we going to be using our old Wiimotes with it? I mean, how do they sell that? Like, hey, you get this tablet, but to play this game, you need this. It kind of seems like the PlayStation Move.
I agree,
problem.
And maybe and the funny part about the argument that I'm throwing out there on the table is that it is based more on the HD capabilities of the hardware box sitting in the television than the tablet. It almost discards the tablet piece. It's like,
yeah,
tablet, whatever, that's fine. You've come up with some new controller, but could the real secret sauce be them moving up to an HD, which was what the Wii HD was going to be all along?
Right,
so,
but that's not a secret sauce. I mean that is.
I
saying,
meant for them bringing. Well,
that is saying that just getting Mario and Zelda and Metroid in an HD thing is enough, and it ain't. I mean, the problem
that
is
Zelda
that
demo looked pretty good.
Oh, believe me, I'm excited to play it. Don't get me wrong, but what I'm saying is, from a consumer perspective, there's no way that that's going to be significantly less expensive than what the reduced price of an Xbox or a PS3 is already going to be at the time it's released.
Sure.
So
no, I agree.
So you're not going to be offering. It's not like you can get something different for less, which is what the Wii was doing.
Right.
The Wii was saying, look, we're getting something different, and you're paying less money. Win for you.
But I think a lot of the appeal of the Wii was just the Wii was a force of nature, and it was a force of nature because of Wii Sports.
Yeah. So, it offered a compelling experience that was unlike anything else.
Of course, the easy counter argument is it comes back to if it really is a technology argument, then the best technology, whoever hits the hardest with that
that tablet idea is the same potential.
The tablet idea.
Staring in your little window is not
the tablet's cool.
The same thing as swinging a tennis racket.
All right, and then last but not least, who knows what console it'll be on, but Gran Turismo 6 is under development, folks.
Well,
enter your bets now on when it'll be done.
Is five done?
GameStop is accepting pre-orders.
Actually, five is in fantastic shape.
Oh, it's in great shape.
It is in fantastic shape. As a matter of fact, if you did 2.0, you already know that 5 is looking great. We have the first official bit of DLC, finally, for Gran Turismo 5. And in this interview, where Yamauchi was speaking with IGN, he said that it's been a year since we've released the game, and in the interim, we've had about 15 updates that were performed on the game. These set up the basic platform from the system. Now that we have that out of the way, we're ready to release more expansions and content to add to the game. So that sounds great. Like, there's a great future for Gran Turismo 5, which there ought to be. It's a fantastic platform to develop on. I'm curious why he also said, of course, we're working on GT6 already. Of course. I love also that he added that what really will be the separating factor is something that we can't update through a DLC. It's something that obviously has to be saved for Gran Turismo 6.
What is it?
I'm not sure they know. It's just
something.
It's going to be something.
It's
going to be something ethereal and fantastic, and you'll love it.
It's planes.
If you haven't brought your Gran Turismo 5 out in a long time, you definitely should plug that in, get the update to 2.0, and check it out. Gran Turismo 5 looking great. Okay, it's time to wrap the show up. That can only mean it's time for finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
Yeah. Okay, I have engaged the reserve battery. I can tell you I am ready to hit the table. Finishing moves time. Christian, you ready?
I am ready. I would like to take this finishing move to give a shout out to Porter Mason, who I think you guys have maybe met. He's a big fan of the show, and I trained with him at UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade Theater here in Los Angeles.
In fighting.
In improv, actually.
Oh, sorry.
And Porter is not only a gamer and more of a retro guy, fan of games, but he's a comic and illustrator, comic books.
Cool.
Funny strips. And he had a new book come out of his comics. And Porter Mason, great guy. Congratulations on getting the book out. Hope you enjoy this week's show. I love him. He's amazing.
Sweet. Jeff Cannata, finishing move.
Surprise, surprise. My finishing move is about Skyrim.
Your every move.
Yeah. Finishing, starting, middle. So we've talked a lot about the Kinect and what the Kinect can offer and what better with Kinect could be. And here I was playing Skyrim and I'm learning dragon voice and words and shouts, and I have to go into the menu and I learn all these shouts, and I go into the menu and I have to switch out my shout to a different shout so I can use it, go from fire breath to whirlwind to all these other shouts that I've learned. How cool would it be is if it teaches you the word, the dragon language word, and you just fucking say the word and it does the shout? That would be amazing. I know it's just voice recognition. It's not actual movement. But it would be amazing if they supported Kinect that way, and that I don't have to go into a menu and select it. I just say call for one or zap for, you know, it doesn't matter what the fucking word is, but that would be immersive and awesome, and it would allow me to dispatch those things without having to go into menus.
Walk up to the mouth of a cave with a bunch of rubble in front of it and go va-voom!
Yeah, and then it does the force push thing. Yeah, that would be amazing.
All right, that's very, yeah.
Make that happen.
That would
retroactive
be
cool. Patch.
Retroactive Kinect patch. We'll see about that. Mine is going to be a bit of a diversion. We don't regularly do hardware reviews. Sony sent over one of those 24-inch. Did you get one of them also?
I did.
Have you played with it?
No, I just got hit today.
Okay. I got mine last week. It is the strangest device ever. I do not understand this thing at all. So they're marketing it as a dorm room / second room television. Okay.
$500.
Right out of the box, I can tell you there's a few problems with that idea. Number one, it doesn't have a TV tuner. So it's not going to be a TV for you unless you're hooking up to a cable box.
Nobody has TV anymore.
Terrestrial HD is actually the best HD you can get. And there's plenty of cheap antennas. So if you're thinking as a secondary, this means that you'd have to get another box, which is usually an extra rental fee. Whereas if you're just going to set it up as an extra television, it would be nice if you could just get like HD broadcast. That's great.
Mm.
Number two, it has there's no remote. There's no remote at all in this thing. So the only thing you're ever going to do, like everything, like, it just sounds silly, right?
There's really no remote?
There's no remote.
That's bizarre.
Everything is done with the buttons, which, by the way, are around the back of the bezel. So you have to like crane your hand around the back of the bezel and feel them out. And by the way, you can't read the labels because, of course, they're on the back.
Right.
You can't set up your
PS3
controller
to do it? Nope. You do all the controls for the television on the back of the television. Now, it does have HDMI auto on, so you could have it, you know, synced with your PS3, so when you turn your PS3 on.
Does it have a sensor for, like, my Harmony remote to interact with it?
Nope. It doesn't have a remote. It doesn't have a remote. Okay? And it is extremely limited on inputs. It has two HDMI ends and one component, you know, which is the old-style HD input. Mm-hmm. That's it. It doesn't have an antenna input. It doesn't have an old
composite,
SD. Nothing. Yeah. Those are the three inputs. It also, by the way, if you haven't figured it out already, doesn't have a computer input. So you can't hook this thing up to a computer unless your computer has an HDMI output on it.
Well, but that's pretty easy to get.
A lot of them have it.
And
but
you can get a cable that'll
You can get a cable that doesn't. But yeah. Fine, but you're so limited. You only have two inputs on the damn thing for HDMI in the first place, okay?
Well, they don't want you to hook up your 360 to it.
Clearly. Obviously. So all those annoyances aside, it's not even that great of a panel. It's an edge-lit LCD. The latest hotness right now is local dimming. It doesn't even have local dimming to it, obviously, because it doesn't do great blacks. It has a lot of, if you've ever looked at an edge-lit panel, edge-lit obviously means that, you know, the light's coming from the edge, like mm-hmm. run through diffusers. And it has a lot of that little glow around the edges on dark screens. Now, if you're like, look, when it has a full color, like full vibrant scene on it, it's a very pretty screen. It looks very nice. But for $500, are you kidding me? Like,
no, I haven't.
I'm
I'll
sorry.
Have to check mine out.
I'm sorry, Sony. I think this one is a huge miss. The 3D stuff is cool. The idea that
people can watch on the same screen.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, you can grab Gran Turismo 5 is one of the games you can pull out and play split screen, but with each of you seeing the full screen through using the shutter glasses. Works great. Looks exactly as advertised. It's a fine feature. I think they missed on the utility pieces of this so much, you know, anyway.
Interesting.
At the same time, Sony also just introduced a fantastic new television that I'm really interested in checking out, the HX929 series, which is supposed to be just phenomenally rad.
I was at BlizzCon and LG had their booth up with their 3D TVs, and I was blown the fuck away, and I want one so bad.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
See, the comparison, so, and to be honest, here's what
you
I'm comparing.
Passive.
I have an LG 24-inch combination TV and monitor that I use as my backup, and I love it, and it's got all of those connections, plus it has DVI in, plus it has an HD tuner in it, plus it has a remote. It works great for me as this multifunction thing, and when I went to sub in the Sony to like take that space, there was all these things I couldn't do suddenly. I was like, well, this is a pain in the neck, and the image quality, I actually sort of prefer on blacks not having the light around the edges. So, you know, go look at it. If it meets your needs, then that's one thing. I think that, you know, I think there's definitely something you could do here. They could make a better device. I hope they'll come back with a second pass that is has better utility to go with the cool side of it. All right, that's the big show. If you're sticking around, when we come back in just a second after the close, we will have the tailgate. It was a mixed week last week. I don't know. I'm still not doing that great. Jeff Cannata still leading the charge up there on the overall results.
Del Rio's on my tail, though.
Right there on your tail. Christian Spicer, thanks very much for joining us. Where would you like people to check you out? CoolPartyGuys.com, of course.
Certainly, and that's it was Billy Bonnell and Greg Santos rapping on that track, not my beautiful nasally voice, unfortunately, and fortunately for our listeners. And you can follow me on Twitter, @Spicer. Come say hi.
Every day, the Totally Rad Show at totallyradshow.com. Any big events?
Yeah, we just did our Skyrim
just
review.
Just did your Skyrim
and,
thing.
Uncharted 3 earlier in the week. And then next week, we're going to have a full Saints Row the Third review and some big movies coming up, too.
Some of the movies? Which, anything?
J. Edgar we just reviewed. That'll be coming out soon. And I think I'm going to see Tintin tonight, so I don't know when that's going to hit. The review's going to hit.
Cool.
I'm very excited to see it.
All right, so there you go. Come by shacknews.com and give us your comments in the official thread. If you're sticking around for the tailgate, we'll see you in just a minute. If not, that's your weekend confirmed, and we are Ghost. You'll get my voice heard over these airwaves. All I gotta do is get me some airplay. Show you that I love you, show you that I care. Show you that I listen, show you that I'm here. I sold you all of that, I sold you everything. I gave my all to y'all, following those are three rings. You know more about me, anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. Everything I ever wanted, everything I ever needed. But I'm still struggling, still competing for your love, your heart, and you. Always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start. All right, guys, here we go. I'm having the worst NFL season, so I'm just going to, I was 1-2 last week. Brooklyn, you were 1-2 with me. Jeff, you were 1-2 last week.
I was also 1-2. And that
Del Rio sneaking back up on you.
Let him get closer. He's so close.
So you're,
feel him.
You're 12-8, and Del Rio's right there at 11-9.
Yeah.
He's right nipping at your heels. So like I said, we got some great games on tap for this weekend. Right off the bat, a big, big Southern rivalry here. We got New Orleans. We got Nollins going into the Georgia Dome to face the Atlanta Falcons. I'm going to let you start it off, Jeff, and then we're going to get Del Rio's right after that. We're going to pair you guys up today.
I love it.
You're the front runner. Who are you picking?
I'm picking New Orleans. They're an oddly up and down team this year.
Yes, they are.
I believe Jekyll Drew Brees is going to bring it, and I think, I'm going to take him.
Saints
even
marching into Georgia.
That's right.
And Del Rio's going Saints.
He chickens
as well.
Out and says the same pick as me.
That's the part there. Like, what you're not hearing right now is that Drew Brees is Del Rio's fantasy quarterback. So, of course, he's going Saints. All right. Christian Spicer, do you have any opinion here?
Atlanta, just because they're at home and both teams are hit and miss this year, Atlanta shows up. Hopefully, I'm going to say Atlanta shows up at home. Big game for them. Atlanta wins.
I'm with you on that one. Michael Turner and Julio Jones doing well. I know, which means it's not going to happen, right? Of course, the way I've been going. I'm taking the Falcons as well in this pick 'em matchup. And last but not least, Brooklyn. She's taking Atlanta too. So three hot Atlantas. Oh, that doesn't bode well. That bodes well for you guys. Wow. The front runners staying. This is why they are in the lead, by the way, as you might have been able to figure out here. Second game, we've got a big, big Midwest matchup. We have the Detroit Lions getting 3 points going into Chicago.
Chicago all of a sudden able to protect their quartererback. And
Cutler really
sacks last week.
And Cutler looking good when he's protected.
Well, I guess you could throw when people aren't hitting you in the face. but I'm going Lions.
Oh,
I'm taking the points and going Lions. I think they're going to get back to their old selves at the
all
end
right.
of the season. Yeah, second
so
half.
There you go. He's and right on the nip of his heels. There you go. Del Rio is going to zig. He's going to zig while Jeff zags. He's going to go with the Bears. Christian Spicer?
I'm going to take the Bears as well. I think he'll have time. He'll play well. It'll be a tough game. It's not going to be a runaway, but I think the Bears are
going
to win.
I'm going Bears as well. The Lions still like searching for an answer with the running game and that pass game. I mean, Stafford's still maybe a little dinged up. I'm going to go Bears at home. Give them the 3 points. I don't need the 3 points. I don't need them.
Yeah, I need them.
Yeah. Give them away. What do you think there, Brooklyn? Also for Detroit. So another split, 3-2. And then in our final game, we have the New York Football Giants riding a surprisingly consistent
comeback win last week.
And Eli looking good.
In the last minute. Oof.
Eli looking good and doing great in fantasy. Eli is like a fantasy sensation this year. They're getting 3.5 points going into Candlestick to take on
my San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, so
you know who I'm picking.
You're
the
going
Niners,
emotional.
I have, yeah, I know. I've picked the Niners in our other thing every time this year, and they have either covered the spread or they have not let me down.
Oh God, I feel like I should be dialing an 800 number in a minute.
They're for real, folks. 8-1.
In games this season where the Niners were favored by 3 or 4. Anyway.
Believe it. They're going to cover. 8-1. Bring it. They're going to win the NFC West this week.
All right. Will they win the West?
They're going to win the NFC West this week. They're going to be the first team to ever win their division before Thanksgiving. Boom.
Boy, that's a hell of a division, too. will they win the division if they win this week?
I think so.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right, Del Rio, which way are you going? He's going with the Giants. Close game, not going to get coverage. So he's just saying not going to get coverage. So, he's not saying necessarily the Niners won't win. He's just saying.
Oh, by the way, I don't think it was last week, but the week before when I was telling you that Frank Gore was going to get 150 yards and you said $100 right now on that and I chickened out.
You should have taken
it. He did.
You should have taken it. You should have taken it.
He had like 100 yards in the first half.
But you didn't.
Like 90 yards.
But you didn't.
I didn't.
It's a shame.
Just because of last week, I think that Giants team will show up. I think it's an emotional high. It's a big game for them. I'm going to take at least the points and then also put my neck out and say the Giants will win it.
Man, Niners have a great defense.
Yes, they do.
And the Giants.
They're at home.
Giants struggling a little bit. Ahmad Bradshaw probably out for this game, but Nix looks like he might be back in there. you know, I think they're starting to hit, you know, like Eli's feeling more comfortable with Ballard at tight end. I'm taking the Giants, and I'm with Christian. I think the Giants win this game.
Wow. Outright, huh?
Outright. Maybe only by a point or two. I think it's going to be a really contested game, but I see the Giants taking this. I think that also the Giants' pass rush has been getting better and that they're going to get in there and rattle Alex.
You should come with me to the San Francisco Saloon and watch the game on Sunday. It's where I go every week. It's freaking awesome.
Where is it?
It's on Pico, at Pico and Bundy, basically.
Oh, that's not bad. No,
am I the only one that
he wants me to go with the Niners? Taylor is like, please, could you go with the Niners? No, I'm sorry. I got the Giants on this one. I got the Giants. I want the points, though. I definitely want the points. He's fucking Del Rio. He's like, I don't want to go 1-2. Piss off. You want to change yours to the Niners? No, he's good. All right. So see, we're going to win. We're going to win. Every week we are going to win. We're going to bring it back. Brooklyn, which way are you going here?
She's on my team.
All right, there you go, folk. We are registered. We are in. Next week, we will do a little update on the fantasy league as well.
But, you and I are not doing well.
Yeah, no, we're not.
But Tim Tebow, I picked him up. He's been a top scorer. He's amazing. 25 points every week. Boom. Anywho.
There you go, folks.
Not enough to win.
We love our football. We still have a few more weeks of it coming into the home stretch here. So, take your sides. Who do you think is going to win overall for the year here? Jeff Cannata, who's doing great in our pool on email as well, or Del Rio, who's resurgent.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.